Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
All right, thank you for listening. Welcome to Signal of Doom. This is the spoiler review that we put together for you guys. We recorded it as a separate episode.
Yeah, heavy, heavy spoilers. If this is auto-queued up your playlist and you haven't specifically gone after spoilers, get out of this now. This is your final warning. This is
scene by scene. This is the real deal.
This is going to ruin the film if you haven't seen it already. You're going to love it, though, if you've seen the film.
Enjoy, kids. Okay, Stu, moving to our spoiler review of Avengers Endgame. Correct?
Yes, correct, Dave.
it's been a lot of fucking negotiation to even understand what we're doing, but like...
Dave struggles whenever we don't do anything linearly. If we have to pre-record a section of the show, Dave's all out of whack. Dave's just struggling.
Okay, so look, for the fucking listeners, this is the in-depth spoiler review of Avengers Endgame. And we're going to get deep into the fucking details.
Yeah, but of course you already know that because we've announced it before we get here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dave again, just floundering.
Doubling. I like to do the double alarms.
Oh, great, yeah.
I like to do the double alarm. Like, you get the first alarm, oh, warning, warning. The second alarm's like, it's about to fucking explode.
All right, let's start, Dave. Let's.
Okay. Well, I mean, they got mine on spoiler score, so I was very high on it, and I, you know... really, really loved this movie. It emotionally just massively engaged me. Stu, if I have to, like, I mean, I guess we'll get you. You gave a fucking incredible score. So, do you want to dive into the details, man, of the spoiler stuff?
I mean, look, for me, in terms of why the score is so high, it's
a 10. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a 10, but it's bundled with the first Infinity War. I feel like this is
right.
It's not part two. I think this movie made it very clear in the first 20 minutes that this is not part two, that it is a separate film, but it feels like two films that really do link together so strongly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was part two. Like, but regardless, like, yeah, they're
no, because the themes, the tempo, everything changed dramatically after about 20 minutes.
Sure, with the five-year jump, yeah.
Well, not with the five-year jump. It's when they killed Thanos.
Sure.
Like, that moment really did end Infinity War for me.
Okay, yeah, okay.
That was the final kind of nail in the coffin that they had failed.
Mm.
And that's when Thor spiraled. That's when...
Sure.
Like, shit hit the fan in the terms of emotional devastation for the Avengers.
It was highly emotional, like, moment.
The whole movie just had emotional bombs dropping.
Dude, I'll say this fucking movie... hit me emotionally as almost nothing does.
I mean, absolutely.
Anything. Like, I was like, wow, this is very effective filmmaking.
I mean, I'm sitting in the cinema and there were literally people, like, openly crying. Like, not even just gently sobbing or single tear down the cheek kind of stuff. It's, like, openly sobbing in the cinema.
There was one woman who sobbed. Michelle claimed it was a woman. I thought it was a girl who sobbed and Michelle laughed. And but I had tears in my eyes at certain scenes, for sure.
Right.
And it's very rare. I'm not a crier in movies. And I will say this, that the discharge of water did not roll down my face, but I definitely had glassy eyes at multiple points during this movie.
There's a couple of hard-hitting moments. There's real emotional depth in this movie.
So, okay, so when we're doing this fucking spoiler review, Stu, should we kick off, like... Do you want to take us through scene by scene, or do you want to go into sort of...
I mean, let's take it scene by scene and work through them as we go, right?
Okay.
So, I mean, we open up with Hawkeye.
Yes.
And that sets the emotional tone for this film.
I was running back from the toilet and just caught... I missed the, like, first couple of seconds, but, like, apparently he was just shooting arrows with his kid, yeah? And that's where I came in. And
then he shows Lana, I think her name's Lana.
I think it was Lana, yeah.
Shows her the right stance, gets her to shoot single arrow.
Yeah.
Bullseye. It's like a really cool father-daughter moment.
It was just
two boys playing catch in the background and his wife making hot dogs. It's
all American.
Yeah, it's like the perfect family day out.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, just in an instant.
It ain't gonna last.
In an instant, the camera turns around and there's just like a half... Oh, Jesus, Dave.
Bit of action.
There's half a dust cloud.
Yeah.
just floating through the air as his family slowly disappears around him.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And you're kind of left with this, oh, shit moment. Like, it's happening then and there, and you start to realize just how devastating that is for Hawkeye.
And he wasn't in Infinity War, was he?
No, and they made an attempt... Well, they made a considered effort to show the ankle bracelet that he was wearing.
Oh, okay.
He was on house arrest that entire time. He was doing the same as Ant-Man.
Right, yeah, okay.
He was there to spend time with his family.
Gotcha.
Because doing time in prison was too hard.
Oh, that's right, because out of what, Civil War or something?
Yeah, after Civil War.
Okay.
He and Ant-Man made deals to be on house arrest.
Ah, I see. Okay.
Instead of doing time, and so they never got broken out.
Far bigger problems than home imprisonment.
Well, yeah, because he was there only to spend time with his family.
Yeah.
And then he has to just have them disappear one day.
Yeah, and that sent him down the spiral that we saw where he was Ronan, which is very much one of the things which had definitely been leaked. And I thought it was quite effective, his spiral down into being Ronan throughout the movie.
Yeah, it was interesting that it was cut, that first scene was cut so short, so dramatically paced, with the shaky cam, so it was all point of view, and he's just devastated. It's, and then it just flashes out. Like, it's a very cool opening for a movie.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. And it, you know, reminded you that the snap affected people who weren't, you know, cited in Infinity War. Like, it was, that was a theme throughout the movie that, you know, the devastation was literally galaxy universe wide, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they did mention that a few times. There's thousands of planets going through the same
and
thing.
And certainly Earth, it was very much an aftermath feel throughout the first act of the movie. You know, you know what I mean? Like, that was a theme that was very prevalent. Like, the aftermath of the Avengers losing and the consequence for the world was, you know, extreme. There was a sense of loss.
Absolutely, yeah. But it was all about the snap, though. So, we jumped from Hawkeye to Tony and Nebula.
Yes.
On board the Benatar.
Yep.
We get the explanation that they've been drifting for 3 weeks at this point.
Yes, that's right.
They'd had 2 days of flight time.
And he was struggling.
But it was on, like, backup power, so they couldn't, like, hyper-jump back to Earth.
No.
And Tony was emaciated, like, really skinny.
Really thin, actually, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, they changed all the trailer info to beef him up a bit.
Yeah.
Because he looked... Effective. I don't know whether they beefed him up in the trailer or whether they made him look thinner in the movie.
He looked real thin once he got back when he was on the IV drip.
But yeah, when he was on the ship and then back, he was really skinny.
That was a good scene.
But really good.
Again, like, pointed to in the trailer, I loved how little story detail got released. You know, like...
Well, looking back, if you go and look back at that trailer, every single shot had been altered.
Yeah, okay.
There wasn't a single shot in that trailer that was, like, in the movie fully.
Good. Yeah.
They intentionally messed with people's minds. Good. I think there was only one or two scenes that weren't from the first act of the movie.
I love it. I love that, like, frankly, I hate my movies being spoiled by the trailers.
These trailers did the perfect job, didn't they?
Mystery. It was so effective. Did you, by the way, walking in, I walked in how I've always, well, I want to walk into movies from now on. I walked in with not a spoiler in the world. I was basically off the internet the previous day. Did you have any spoilers when you were walking in, Stu? Any outside information?
I knew that Thor lived.
Okay. Well,
which you can kind of call a spoiler.
Okay, yeah.
I knew that Thor made it through. Okay. That was it.
How did you find that out? Did someone tell you that, or you saw it just somewhere?
No, there's actually a news item that I didn't put in the news because it was spoilery for you.
Okay, cool.
So I kept it out, and then I haven't put it in there since.
So you came across that news.
But I came across a news item, and I read it, and I was like, oh, well, that means that Thor lives. Okay,
it was lovely to walk in, man, and and just be so...
Yeah.
Fresh.
Yeah.
Like, I really treasured it, and that's how I'm going to be doing it for Star Wars and how I'm going to do it, you know, from this point forward. Like,
I mean, in our kind of game as well, where we're doing the news every week, it's not easy.
No. And
because
I'm
come across spoilers.
I like rumors and all that kind of shit, but I'm talking about, like, when the movie has hit cinemas and I'm seeing it, like, because I caught it, like, a day later in Australia because I was busy that previous day. I'm talking about once it's hit cinemas, I'm openly avoiding the internet so I don't go onto that post where it's like, and so such and such died, what about, you know? And
I know people where that happened. I've spoken to people where they went on Facebook and they went, well, that movie's now ruined.
But you know what? This is my message to people. Show a bit of discipline. That's what I did. I locked fucking down. like, I just locked it down. I was talking to Ray at Into the Night, and we were just saying, take the fucking lockdown policy. It's not that hard, people. Like, you know, really, just turn off. I turned off Twitter because Twitter's the worst. Twitter's even worse than Facebook. Twitter is like...
Yeah, I mean, you've got to play it smart. Don't intentionally go on places where you know spoilers could be lurking.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
But, I mean, the other thing is, don't be a dick about it if you know something that they don't.
Well,
like, don't intentionally spoil them for other people.
I completely agree with that as well. But you can't control that, is what I'm saying. Like, people are people. Like, it could be fucking some guy you've never fucking heard of in some group spouting off. So I just stayed away from Facebook and Twitter. And that's all I had to do. And it was just for a day.
Yeah, exactly right. If you're that invested in a movie, like we are with the Avengers movie...
Yeah, it's huge.
Then it's not a real issue to stay away from Facebook for a day or two, because honestly, you're going to be seeing it in the first day or two.
For example, you shot on Wednesday night, so Wednesday you were working, and I imagine you pretty much stayed off all social media that day, and you know you get to, say, 7 p.m. and you can see it. You're like, it's not that hard.
Well, I mean, I was at work, so there was no social media that day.
True, but even on your phone or whatever, you know what I'm saying? It could all be popping off. You trust your close mates not to fucking ruin it for you, but it could be fucking Jenny from the block or some idiot on Facebook or Twitter even.
Yeah, but like, I mean, the same goes in reverse. Like, I saw my mates on Anzac Day. We had a public holiday here in Australia on Thursday.
Sure.
I caught up with most of my mates then, and a lot of them hadn't seen it.
Where was I?
You were seeing the movie.
I'm just kidding.
You were in the movie.
Just kidding.
You're in the cinema.
Okay.
Asking me not to spoil it, but to tell you things.
When I got so irate at Karl Stefanovic, who took shots of people singing on Anzac Day.
Oh, yeah. Remember my... And then look where his career is right now.
Yeah, he's in the toilet. We're laughing at you, Stefanovic.
We've got more listeners than Karl does right now, so...
Do you remember how offended I got? You had to talk me off the ledge. You had to talk me off the ledge.
You were so angry at some nobody.
Some nobody who I normally never know anything about, but I happen to see it on one fucking side.
Yeah, anyway. Great, okay, so...
Okay, so where are we in this fucking review, Stu?
Like, yeah, I know, you just derailed it once again, Dave. We're still on the Benatar.
Okay, well,
Nebula's kind of... We get some humanising moments with Nebula.
Oh, yeah, they flipped it.
Which is a smart play early on in this film.
Mm-hmm.
They make her out to be really trying to change and adapt. And it's little things, like understanding a fair game... Yes. With Tony, which I thought was a really nice moment, sharing the food with him.
Well, yeah, she gave him. She said, "You finished the chips," kind of thing, didn't she?
Yeah, or the space ration, or whatever it was. Yeah. But it was like there were nice moments like that, and then looking after him, putting him in the chair, and putting the jacket on him.
Yeah, she was very much humanized the present version of Nebula.
Yeah, which has always been borderline. She's always been a little bit.
I thought she was a fucking psycho for most of the...
Yeah, for every other movie she's been in.
Yeah.
But they intentionally made efforts to make her humanized.
And in fairness.
Early on in this film, which paid
important.
Off.
It was important.
Which paid off massively at the end. It was smart filmmaking.
Yeah.
We see Captain Marvel show up.
Yes.
Appearing almost like an angel.
And bathed in light. One of the least surprising moments of the movie.
Absolutely. We all kind of saw that coming.
Yes.
And
she had her long hair in that scene, didn't she? Yes, she did.
Yeah, interestingly, she filmed this movie entirely before Captain Marvel.
Yeah. Well, didn't you hear the fucking PC warriors on the internet were getting her little panties in a bunch because she wore lipstick? And it's like, oh, get it over there. It's like, that was the fucking decision of the actress, Brie Larson. So calm down, PC Nation. You know, like, they were up in arms about it, Stu.
I'm glad you're bringing that into the review, Dave. That's important for everyone to know.
Hey, well, she was wearing lipstick in the scene. I'm just bringing it up, man. That's what I'm here for.
Okay, well... Great.
But hey, guess what? It's Unfiltered Dave. You know, I'm going to be calling the shots.
I'm tired of Unfiltered Dave. I've had 2 weeks and Unfiltered Dave's boring as shit.
Continue, Stu. Captain Marvel turned up.
Captain Marvel turns up, carries the Benatar back to Earth.
Yes.
Lands in front of Avengers HQ where Cap's beardless now.
Yeah, he just shaved.
He just shaved, putting down the razor.
Good.
And we see them all kind of run out there.
Yeah.
Bruce is normal Bruce Banner at this point.
Yep.
With Rhodey and Natasha.
Mm-hmm. Liked Rhodey a lot in this movie.
Rhodey had some good moments.
Yeah, it's a good moment.
And we get a really nice reunion with Cap and Tony.
Sure. And RDJ, Tony, struggling physically.
Physically, yeah, because he's really so thin. He's dehydrated. He's running low.
Yeah.
And comes off, and there's kind of this moment of neither of us could stop him. But and there's this moment of respect, and because remembering they hadn't seen each other since Civil War.
When he did let him go,
kind of, yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of tension.
But they didn't run into each other in Infinity War.
Although, mind you, in the next scene, there's a lot of tension. Or shortly afterwards, when he's on the IV drip.
Yeah, so when he comes out and he's got the IV and he's kind of recovered a little bit.
Yeah, but he's thin. He's very thin.
Well, this is like the day of.
Yeah, yeah.
And he basically just blames Cap.
Oh, he goes off on him.
And it's referencing everything from Ultron. We
My
should
favorite
have built
saying, a suit of armor around the world.
A suit of armor around the world.
Sounds like a cold world. And it's like, you know.
But the quote. Colder. The quote was prophetic. When he comes out with, we'll lose, we'll do that together too. We did lose together.
I've always been on Team Iron Man, and this only made me more fucking. It's very true. He actually wasn't referenced in this movie. He had the vision, if you recall. He knew what the nightmare was, which was these fucking things coming through rifts and stuff.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, he wanted the suit of armor around the world. If only we'd had it, you know.
Well, the problem was the first time they tried it, they built Ultron.
Okay. Well,
I mean, when you. Not a great place to start.
Yeah, but they beat him.
They did. And they killed thousands of people doing
but
it.
Anyway, but like, I like that he referenced one of my favourite lines. I always like a self, you know, a throwback.
And interestingly enough, that is the same scene where they first say the word Endgame.
Right.
Just as like an Easter egg. That's the first reference of Endgame.
Okay.
And comes back in one of the first scenes of Endgame.
It's when did they say it? In Age of Ultron?
Yeah, it's the same scene. Tony points at the sky and says, we can bust arms dealers to live long day, but that up there, that's the end game.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, what a powerful scene that is.
And he's talking about...
It's one of my favourite scenes.
Whatever's coming.
Yeah, yeah, which is this.
Which is Thanos, but he didn't know it at the time.
No. He did have a vision of some sort. Remember, he has...
Yeah,
has
not- like the stone, the mind gem gave him a vision.
Yeah.
And he saw Cap's shield shattered.
Yeah, and they were all dead, weren't they?
Saw them all dead, other than Cap and... Banner, I think, are both alive.
Okay.
But they're kind of dying, arrows in them, and...
Yeah, struggling.
So, yeah, very prophetic, kind of referencing
Ultron.
Loving
the scene-by-scene stuff, Stu. Wow, Stu's really bringing it...
This movie really did well at referencing past movies. Really well.
I know, and I loved it, actually. I fucking loved it.
You don't need to have seen them all to get this movie and do it well. They intentionally made it a very linear plot right up until one point.
Yes.
So it's very easy to fall into it if you've maybe only seen Infinity War.
Yeah, for sure.
But
you get a lot more out of it if you've seen the other
ones. Yeah, exactly. You get rewarded for every other movie you've seen.
It was a real pat on the head to a lot of Marvel
If you've
fans.
Seen all other 21, you get so much added value.
Percentage-wise, how many people do you reckon have seen all of them, Stu, or close to? Like a lot of the people turning up to Endgame?
Is it? I mean, opening weekend, you'd think most have seen all of them.
Yeah.
I would say everyone in the opening weekend audience would have seen at least 80% of the films.
Yeah, so would I.
They might have missed one or two.
Yeah. Which is forgivable.
Like, something like you, like, if you'd missed Ant-Man 2, no one would have been surprised, and you wouldn't have missed out on really much.
No.
Like, you would have
missed out on the one scene which was fucking good in the movie, which was at the end, where that was turned to dust. You know, the end scene.
Well, no, you not in Ant-Man 2.
That was in Ant-Man 2, wasn't it?
That was in Infinity War.
What is the scene? Was it? Okay, all right, I forget. I thought that was in Ant-Man 2.
The whole Quantum Realm thing is Ant-Man 2.
Right. But at the end of
and
Ant-Man
the van
2,
that they're using is Ant-Man 2.
Yeah, okay. In Ant-Man and the Wasp, I thought the last scene was...
Him in space.
Okay.
Him in the Quantum Realm.
Okay, I'm getting confused. All right.
Right, and the people outside turn to dust.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. In Ant-Man 2, though.
Yeah, but that was after Infinity War, where everybody turned to dust. That wasn't a reveal.
No.
He was stuck in the quantum realm when you saw Hope, Janet, and you saw Hank turn to dust.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, I get your point. But anyway, regardless, yes, you're saying most of the people would have
seen... But I think going forward, most people would have seen more than half.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. Yeah.
I think people are probably a good 12 to 15 films deep...
Mm.
At this stage, if they're seeing this in cinemas, they're going to be rewarded for that.
I wonder what the opening box office is going to be in the States on this.
I mean, it's not released in the States. As we're recording it...
Oh. Well, today.
If you went to the midnight screening in the States, you will have seen it by now.
Well, it's Friday now, here, Friday night. I can tell you out of the computer, seen it.
Yeah, if you went to the midnight screening, you would have seen it already. But if you're seeing it like during Friday day, you're probably seeing it right now.
Okay.
Literally now as we're recording.
Live.
So opening numbers for the States aren't out yet?
No.
Worldwide at this point, they're just under 200 million.
Okay, so next week we'll have...
Which is insane when you include that it's not in China, it's not in America.
Yeah.
That's foreign markets like Australia.
Impressive, yeah.
200 million before we hit Thursday, Friday numbers is...
No, very good. Very
bonkers good.
Very hot. We'll have an opening weekend breakdown next week. So, yeah I really dug that scene, man, where Robert Downey Jr. is on the IV drip and he really kind of gives it to Cap. And he goes, and you weren't there. Remember he says that at one point to Cap?
Yeah.
Like because Annie J.
And I needed
there,
you.
Man. Yeah.
I needed you, and what you need, that trumps what you need now.
Yeah.
And he just laying on the
ground. He was firing fucking bombs.
Yeah.
And in fairness, can I just say this for the record? Annie J. and Tony Stark have been such integral parts of this Marvel Universe, and at times, like, I love Captain America too, but Tony was up there on fucking wherever they were. Was it Titans, Stu?
Yeah.
And he was putting the big ones in against Thanos in the previous...
Although I will point out, this is a different Titan to the Titan that exists in our actual solar system. It's a weird Marvel thing.
Right, okay.
Because Titan is a moon of Saturn. Yeah. In our solar system, we have a Titan.
Yeah.
The way they made Titan in the Marvel Universe, it's further away. It's different. It's
okay.
It's a weird thing. Okay. But, right. Yeah, there's a planet called Titan in the Marvel Universe. They were all there.
Yep.
It's kind of a catch-22, because if Cap had been on Titan, nothing would have changed.
No. Can I ask a question? And I forgot of this, and this is my fucking forgetfulness. Was Thor on Titan?
No. He was in Wakanda.
Where was he?
He was in Wakanda.
Right, okay. So
he was at Nibbledalir getting the Stormbreaker. Then he uses the Stormbreaker to summon the Bifrost.
Yes.
Transports him, Rocket, and Groot.
Okay, so
to Wakanda in the middle of the battle,
so
and then
Thor
you get that.
Fought Thanos.
Well, at the end of the movie, there's the go for the head.
Yeah,
because Thanos goes to Wakanda.
Right, that's what I was trying to remember. Because when Thor got him, he said, "I went for the head." And
after Thanos gets the Time Stone,
yeah,
he leaves Wakanda because the other gems are on Earth.
That's what I'm getting confused. So Thanos had gone to Wakanda and fought. Okay, gotcha.
So Thanos travels to Earth. Within a few moments, he's ripped the stone out of Vision's forehead, which is the final gem, puts it in the gauntlet, Thor throws the axe at him, buries it in his chest.
That's right. And it was like...
You should have gone for the head, snap the fingers.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
So, he has fought Thor.
Thank you, Stuart.
But in Wakanda in the forest. We then get the kind of moment that ends Infinity War for me.
Yes.
And that separates this movie and sends it in a whole other direction, which was the killing of Thanos. The brutal killing of Thanos.
It was fucking cool. I love that scene. It was like a planned scene. A Thanos who was burnt out, damaged, kind of over it.
They travel to kind of an Easter egg for the comic books.
The garden?
They call it the garden, and the gardener is one of the keepers of the Infinity Gems.
We've met him previously in one of the books we've done.
Yeah, in Infinity Gauntlet he was in there.
Yeah.
So kind of an Easter egg that, the gardener was there, and they call it the garden.
Mm.
But Thanos is there, like,
just
growing vegetables, making
chilling
stews.
Like Bob Dylan.
But he looks terrible.
He looks ravaged.
You can tell he's used the gauntlet again.
Yeah.
And he has, like, that's how they tracked him there.
And he said he used the stones to destroy the stones.
Yeah. Mm. Which almost killed him, and he looked like it.
He was, all his face was all burnt and everything.
Yeah. Like, when he used the stones the first time in Infinity War, his arm was all, like, charred and burnt, and this time his entire left side was, charred and burnt. He had a limp.
I fucking love this scene, though, where, like, things like, the Hulkbuster armor came out.
Yeah, Banner and the Hulkbuster, Captain Marvel flying through.
It was cool.
And then you had Thor just walk in there with the axe and just cut the arm off.
Yeah.
There's no pulling the gauntlet off. Just cut the arm off.
Yeah.
Which, again, Easter egg, Marvel Universe, every movie, someone loses an arm.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's homage to Star Wars.
Oh, you've mentioned this before. That's very well picked up, Stu, by you over there.
Every movie. In Infinity War, you saw the Cull Obsidian reach through.
Who loses a hand in Iron Man 3? I've no idea. I don't know.
In Iron Man 3, the Extremis, they cut off the arm and it regrows on Aldrich Killian.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool. So that's a bit of a joke by Feige and the Russos and stuff.
But yeah, Feige's done it. At one point, he just went, I'm going to make someone lose an arm in every film as an homage to Star Wars.
That's cool.
And Disney went totally cool with that.
Yeah.
Thanks for referencing another one of our properties.
Yeah.
And they've done it since. So in this one, we see Thanos loses the arm.
So what does Thor do? He cuts the arm off and then he chops the head off. Is that right?
They cut the arm off. They realize that the stones aren't there.
Yeah.
They quiz him about what he's done.
That's right.
Nebula comes in with, that's right, he's telling the truth.
Yeah.
And there's nothing we can do. And Thor just snaps.
Thor basically says, at this point, then that you serve no further.
Slices process. Him off. And then they're like, what the hell did you do? And he's like, I went for the head.
Right decision. Right decision. Thanos is very dangerous, as proven in this movie, even without the stones.
Oh, no. This is a beaten Thanos. This is Thanos who thinks he's won, that's crippled, horribly crippled because of the stones.
Well, I mean, I could
see. And living, like, in a little garden on a peaceful planet.
Would you leave him, Stu? I wouldn't. Like,
the whole Avengers thing is the whole no kill, you know?
Thor's killed before in the comics many times.
In the comics, yeah.
Captain America has killed many times. Many times.
But there's always questions over it in the MCU.
Yeah. Look, I've got no problems with it. Like, and I think they played it well in the movie.
They did. And it was him breaking, though. Like, it was meant to show that he's not a sound Thor.
Hmm.
That this was him at the last.
I didn't see it as the wrong decision, though. I thought
no, it wasn't. It was, from a filmmaker's point of view, it was a brilliant decision.
Yeah. No, I think. Oh, he served his purpose, really.
And he kind of
story-wise
cuts the head off and just walks out. Like, he's done.
And you are right. That does conclude that chapter very soundly.
And at that point, you realise there's no coming back. There's no, let's just go and steal them and click it back into existence and then have a new villain.
We've got to cope with the aftermath of our defeat now.
This is, there is no coming back. We have lost.
Yeah.
And it kind of ends that Infinity War story for me. All the characters are back on Earth and they're all dealing with it and they've all...
Well, like, Thanos is now gone.
And then you've got this 5-year time jump.
Which I really, really enjoyed. I thought that was a really neat thing to do. I've got a question, though, which I'll bring up later in the movie in regards to Spider-Man.
Yeah, there's actually a couple of interesting points with Spider-Man and that time jump.
Yeah, because I am confused by what happens with him in terms of that.
Well, what's interesting is not only does Spider-Man turn to Ash, but all of his friends must have turned to Ash.
Oh, that explains it then. Well, that's
because otherwise,
free card.
Because anyone that didn't is now 5 years older.
No, that's what I'm asking you. So,
yeah.
Like Genki, for example, or whoever the guy's name is, the big guy.
Ned,
yeah, who's based on Genki.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay.
But we've seen the trailer for Spider-Man where MJ and Flash and Ned, and they're all the same age.
Well, thank you.
Which means that they all turned to Ash, and they were all brought back.
Gotcha.
At the same age.
Well, that's actually a neat...
Anyone that wasn't is now 5 years older.
Okay.
So Ant-Man's daughter Cassie...
was older.
Didn't get snapped.
Yeah.
So she's now 5 years older.
Whereas Wasp did, Janet.
The rest of the Ant-Man crew...
yeah.
Got snapped. Michael so they are the same. Yeah. They are 5 years. They are the same age as they were 5 years before.
Gotcha.
So they didn't age.
Okay, thank you for answering that question. Sorry for cutting.
It is a weird.
I did have that in the cinema. I thought that and thought I'll bring that up later.
Yeah, not as noticeable with adults, but very noticeable with the younger cast members.
Yeah, for kids.
Like, so like Hawkeye's entire family all snapped, and at the end of the movie, they're all back the same age as they were in the first scene.
Oh, right, so his daughter didn't age.
Nope.
But Ant-Man's did.
Ant-Man's daughter did, because she survived the snap. She'd spent 5 years without her dad.
That's right.
And now she's 5 years older. So there's going to be a few people that are older, which has allowed them to recast if they had to.
Sure.
Especially things like Spider-Man, entirely young cast.
Yeah.
They could have removed any one of them and then brought in a 5-year older version.
Yeah, well, don't forget that.
Which they didn't. Like Spider-Man, they didn't recast anyone.
No.
But that was kind of their opportunity.
Yeah.
They've also now set up, they've got all the pieces to do Young Avengers.
Yes. And that's something I
because they've got things like Cassie Lang, which is stature. They showed Iron Lad at the end of the film.
Who was he?
The kid from Iron Man 3.
Yeah. Was he in it?
He's in the funeral. Yeah.
Oh, right. Standing by himself.
Yeah. He's the guy that everybody in the cinema was looking at and going, who's that kid?
Well, including me.
Everyone, I can hear people saying, who's the blonde kid?
So that's...
it's the kid from Iron Man 3 who receives the workshop upgrade. And
I really like that story. You know how much I love Iron Man 3. I've been, so that's neat, actually.
Yeah, I like that he was there. Yeah. It's a cool little nod, even though he's not in the movie at any other stage and
but
hasn't been since Iron Man 3.
Invited to the funeral is fitting, you know?
Yeah.
considering his connection to Tony Stark.
One of the only friends of Tony Stark,
crucial,
I suppose.
Crucial point in his, you know...
But yeah, it, like, so that's... they're kind of saying that's going to be Iron Lad.
God, I hope they don't call him that. Oh, Jesus Christ. Like,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Please, it's a bit weird, but...
Call him anything but Iron
Lad. So we then get this 5 year later, Cap's doing the support group. And nice little Easter egg, Joe Russo.
Did I also see Jim Starlin there? I think I did.
Yeah, Jim Starlin's in the group, who wrote Infinity Gauntlet.
And famously left Marvel Comics when they wouldn't let him do the future direction of Thanos at the moment.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fucking... There's a lot of...
There's a bit of controversy and well, he politics behind the scenes
Tom Brevoort, it's quite contentious.
Yeah.
As in, he gave the stories and then Marvel gave it to another writer with the same story and Brevoort went from, oh, no, it's all a coincidence to basically admitting.
Yeah.
Allegedly, according to Jim Starlin, who I believe.
Yeah.
Jim Starlin, another creator screwed by Marvel Publishing, paid handsomely by the Marvel movies. It's a fucking crime. You know, like... The Marvel Disney business side paid Jim Starlin well. Marvel Comics treat him like shit. It's a fucking travesty, you know?
I mean, some would argue that Marvel Comics don't have the money, whereas Marvel Films absolutely have the money.
I'm glad he's getting...
To be honest, I'm actually more upset that Disney isn't funding the comics as much as they should be.
Yeah, good point.
Because they should be using some of this profit they're making from the movie, the billions of dollars they're making from the movies.
Good point.
And putting 10%...
Well, unfortunately...
Back into the comic book industry and getting the best... Because they could blow DC out of the water right now. The money they've got backing them in Disney...
Well, they've both got powerful corporations backing them. Like, Warner Brothers is fairly powerful with...
Time DC. Warner's huge, but right now, if you compare it to the size of Fox, Disney...
Oh, and the success both publishing lines are chronically underfunded for what they should be compared to what their properties are making, you know.
It just feels like it's...
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. The waiting's not right. But anyway, it's a different issue.
But it was good to see Jim Starlin there, and it was Jim good Starlin's to see the Russo there. Doing the speech.
Yeah, so Joe Russo is the veteran kind of guy that's talking about going on a date with the other guy.
And he's talking about, like...
How he cried when the dessert was...
They're referencing the snap, I guess, and the impact of that.
Yeah, well, they're all kind of trying to get over how they lost everybody.
It would be interesting. It's good to see a movie like this grapple with that kind of existential... feeling that like half the world and universe literally disintegrated. So potentially your partner.
But I mean, going from kind of Thanos to that, the color palette dimmed.
Yes.
They intentionally dropped the contrast. It was gray. It was miserable. Like the weather was down as well.
Yeah.
Everything felt a little muted.
It was very fitting though.
A little darker.
Because you're right.
It was, and we see this 5 year jump and we're now seeing like stadiums that are just never going to be filled. So they're derelict.
Can I ask a question?
You see boats that have all washed up.
If half the world went, I would have thought like baseball games and stuff would still be filled. Like, I thought that they oversold. Like, if you look at the Premier League in England, like, if half the world goes, those games are still filled.
But remember, half the players have gone.
Good point. Yeah, it has an impact. It has an impact on everything, I guess.
Like, half of the entertainers have gone, as well as half the crowds.
He mentioned the Mets were gone.
Yeah, they said how much we missed the Mets.
That was a good line. That actually hit home. I was like, okay.
It's kind of a personal bit, and it's something that you don't think of in a superhero film. Something that's massive.
And it worked well.
And then you start realizing, oh shit, like, my favourite TV shows don't exist.
Because
the actors and the crews are gone. Or if they do,
the fucking actors have been recast.
But they won't have the production house. They won't have the TV, the cameraman, the back end, the broadcasters, the TV, everything.
Most of that stuff's replaceable. There's a lot of hungry mouths to feed in terms of TV production. Like,
well, you know. I think what they pointed to was everyone had to pick up different roles.
Okay.
You now have to think of if only half the farmers are there.
Yeah.
We still need to farm everything.
Good point.
So a lot of people would have had to go back to farming.
And most importantly, the sense of loss would be pervasive.
But it's the little things. And that's what they made clear. It's the little things.
Yeah,
okay. It's losing your favourite sports team. Or it's not having your favourite musician. Or something small and personal.
No, exactly. Which would impact on life.
Yeah.
No, good point, Stu.
But it's a nice little...
It's not heavy-handed, but it's very effective.
No, it's a nice little scene with Joe Russo doing his thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Joe Russo puts himself in every one of his movies. He's always in the Marvel movies.
And this was an extended one, though.
This is the first time I've seen him actually have a scene, and he did pretty well.
Yeah, I thought he was good, yeah.
Yeah. So it was great, which showed Cap kind of doing what he does and leading and...
Yeah, Cap's talking about moving on. There's a really interesting scene coming up with Natasha, where he's talking to Black Widow.
Yeah.
Where they, in fact, reference his style of saying, well, let's move on, let's do it. And then she criticizes it, or at least questions it. Like, I hope you're not going to... If you're trying to cheer me up, I'll throw a peanut butter sandwich at you. And he goes, force a habit. I like that line.
Yeah.
Because he's so reflexive to move on and make the best of it.
Like, well, that's his brand. His brand is Cap. Look on the positive.
Yeah, yeah. And that's him, isn't it?
And it is. Well, yeah. It is him, but it's his brand.
Yeah, true.
And he's got to sell that. He's got to be that person.
Yeah, and I like that
even if he doesn't believe in it.
She tossed it back at him a little bit, and she said, force a habit, and sort of apologised. And I liked that little, just a little moment, little character.
And they, that was the same time they introduced the kind of hollow council that Natasha's running.
That was cool. We saw Captain Marvel's new haircut, which I liked.
Yeah, straight from the comic books, the shorter Captain Marvel haircut, which I like. Yeah, and she basically says, which I thought was a smart move,
I'll be away.
There's thousands of planets all going through the same shit, and I'm helping all of them. I'm not going to be back for a long time.
You know what it was? It was very Superman-esque in, like, he can't be everywhere at once, no matter how fast he is.
No, and it does kind of show that she has limits.
Yeah, exactly.
But it also cleverly takes their strongest, most overpowered character
off the table.
Off the table when they need.
And it is a little on the nose.
When they need to do little heisty things.
You might not see me for a while, and I kind of rolled my eyes, because that was very... There are a few on-the-nose moments in this movie, and that was one of them.
But I didn't think that one was too bad. I thought
it wasn't too bad, but it wasn't too good either.
Some of them were bad. That one wasn't anywhere near as bad.
It was noticeable, but it was... Yeah, I agree. It was
that was her saying, I've got limitations. And Rocket actually went, no, that's a good point. And I like that.
Oh, dude, if I was writing the script, I would have done the same thing, frankly. That's a clever move.
It's good to take her out.
Yeah.
But Okoye kind of having to tell Nat it's an earthquake, calm down, that was cool as well.
Yeah.
Showing that Nat's overthinking,
She's very much in damage control mode.
And she's assumed Nick Fury's role.
Yes. But she was kind of her apartment, though.
Well, that was Avengers HQ.
Right. But it was just very, she looked very drawn out.
It feels like she's living in Avengers HQ.
Cheadle. Had a one-on-one with her, which I liked. Always liked Cheadle.
Cheadle's there saying he's in Mexico and he's come across a massacre from Ronan.
Yes, that's right, the cartels.
Then she was like, it's a rival cartel. And he's like, it's definitely Barton.
I didn't have a problem with that. Like, I'm not one of these people who gets up in arms and someone kills. Like, Hawkeye's killed in the comics many times. He killed him at Fractions comics. Like, you know, like...
No. It's not about the fact that they've killed at all. Like, that's a comic book thing.
Yeah.
It's... In this version of the universe, it's always been a PG universe.
Yeah.
There's no blood. There's no... Like, it's a PG universe.
Yeah, but, like, meanwhile, half the universe got wiped out. So,
snapped with no pain, with no suffering, instant disappearing.
Yeah.
I mean, they even call them the Vanished. If that's not a gentle way to put it, I don't know what it is.
It's very gentle.
But when Ronan's killing cartels brutally...
Yeah.
And they're saying, like, these scenes are brutal.
Yeah.
That I can understand why people don't like. But it's pointing to the fact that he's left. He's not Hawkeye.
It's a character moment. Like, sorry, that's what
he's Ronan now. It's not Hawkeye
doing that. It's a character moment. To me, it's a little controversial.
He's gone down the rabbit hole. He's turned dark.
If they did it and it was just Hawkeye and he turned up to Avengers headquarters and no one had a problem with it, I'd have a huge problem with it because it doesn't fit with the tone. But them doing it like that, her having the reaction of resignation mixed with what do I do, and him just going down that dark path, it was treated very well. I really liked that.
It's a brilliant setup. Time. This movie has a brilliant setup, and it's very linear. It's very easy to follow. You understand exactly where these characters are at and why.
It's one of the strongest examples of superhero filmmaking I've seen, and it's one of the strongest examples of filmmaking I've seen in a number of years. I think it's a remarkably good movie, actually. I think it's strong on so many points that we're going to cover. Like, I actually, structurally, I think a lot of these Marvel movies are C-pluses, but this one...
The bulk of them are paint by numbers.
Yes.
It's a very clearly defined Act 1, 2, and 3.
Have you noticed the Russo brothers are behind a lot of the bigger successes?
Winter Soldier, Civil War, and Infinity Wars,
I know, and it's the thread line is quite thorough. They've really mastered the art by this movie, I think. I noticed that during the movie.
Well, I mean, these are two guys that read the comics and they fundamentally understand.
Yeah, they get
not only the characters, but how they work together.
Yeah, they get it.
And that's tough for a lot of directors that have come from TV, come from movies that don't have any comic book experience.
Or, and they've read very few comic books. They don't really get the
They often treat superheroes like characters from a rom-com that have superpowers. Because that's what they're used to. They're used to dealing with characters in a rom-com setting.
Mm. Yeah, I hear.
And then they've just thrown superpowers into the mix and it doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, or it works on CW and that's all you get.
But no, that's how we get things like an Ant-Man.
Yeah.
That's writing characters as if they're rom-coms, and then every now and again they'll show off a power.
I'll tell you a movie that I feel... Guardians 1 goes close. I also would say Thor Ragnarok is maybe not quite at the level, but this movie also has the added value of so many payoffs. But that's another movie that I think got into this territory of extremely good filmmaking. Do you know what I mean? Inside, it's not easy to do. So continue, Stu, because that was a great scene with those hollow people popping up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, and, I mean, it ends with Ant-Man knocking on the front gate.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Coming in after he reunited with Cassie.
He got buzzed out previously, didn't he, out of the, whatever you call it.
Yeah, he was in the self-storage.
Yeah.
With Chang from Community as like the security guard.
He got a big laugh from us.
I'm glad he didn't have any lines, though. I really like that he didn't
speak. Saw that guy the other day, and he's in Crazy Rich Asians as well.
Yeah.
Of course. He turns up in everything.
He also has the worst comedy special I've ever seen in my life on Netflix.
He's a one comedian at best, dude.
Like, oh, man. Every joke goes back to... Remember that time where I was in this movie? And you're like, fuck off, man.
What he does, he does.
He's cashing in on The Hangover, something fierce.
Yeah, but successfully. But yeah, anyway, it was good. Yeah, he got a FaceTime for a second.
Yeah, he got 1 second with a fake
mustache. So Scott Lang ejects into the present now, coming back from 5 years in the past.
I mean, we've already covered that he goes through the vanishing boards. He meets up with Cassie, who's 5 years older. Mm-hmm. There's a nice reunion moment where they just kind of hug each other.
That's right. And then, I think, is it he starts talking... What is the scene where he starts talking?
Then we go to, like, stuff. Yeah, Cap's there. They bring him into Avengers HQ, and he's basically just ranting, saying, I don't understand how it would work. I don't have any of you figured out quantum mechanics, but...
No, but
he just knows that time works differently and there must be some way to do it.
Great way to describe it for the dumbos like me. And he's like, I was in there for 5 hours, not 5 years. Because they were like, must have been long 5 years. He goes, I wasn't in there for 5 hours.
Yeah.
And then that triggers the conversation.
Is Tony it possible?
There?
No.
And then they then go to Tony.
They then go, he says, who do we talk to about this?
Right.
And next scene you see them pulling up.
Yeah.
And it's Iron Man walking out. Sitting down
with this kid,
chow time with little Morgan H. Stark.
Oh, geez, feels
such a cute kid.
For those who think, I said this to Ray, my reputation precedes me. She knows that I like to consider myself a cold, heartless human being, you know, a conqueror of worlds.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
To be honest, that's how I like to view myself and how I like to live my life. But this movie, it did get the inner Dave out.
With the little kid coming out and wearing Rescue's helmet as well, I liked. Oh,
yeah, it was very good. And he's just living a life that he never has taken the time to have, and he has it.
It's the life that he couldn't have as Iron Man.
Yes.
And it took him losing
to
leave that life.
Yeah. And I mean, he's got all the money in the world and everything, but really what he never had was that stable family.
And now he's in a home on a bit of land with Pepper and Morgan, and he's just living the kind of American white picket fence dream, you know?
In rural wilderness, like a long way from wherever. A long way from any other problems. Like,
I mean, we kind of assume it's somewhere in upstate New York, you know, but...
He's living the dream, and it's peace for him. It's peace.
But it's a beautiful little setting. He's sitting on a river, and he's talking to his little kid.
Yeah.
And there's some great chemistry between those two.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
But Robbie Downey's just... Great. He's good.
Great actor. I'll go into more detail about Robbie Downey later in this review, but it's a well-acted scene, and you just sense... if you're me, I just knew what was coming, man. Like, unfortunately.
The piece, that was the first time it kind of clicked, and I'm like, oh, no. They're introducing us to his family and making us fall in love.
Yeah, we're... If we didn't love him enough already, we're now really loving the whole idea. Like,
yeah, which is dangerous territory for a movie where there's going to be death.
Such a big movie. And then they all turn up. They basically pitch the idea to him of the time machine. He basically says, you're crazy.
He rubbishes it. And some of the lines are, you know, is this plan based on Back to the Future?
Yeah.
And they have to do this guilty, maybe? But there was a nice moment at the end where he's like, if you don't want to talk shop, come in and have lunch.
Stay for lunch.
Like, stay, meet the family, all this sort of... And it was...
There's not genuine animosity. He's just... He's finally got something that he values.
More than... Yeah.
Man, you know, yeah. The Avengers and everything. Because don't forget, he started it, you know? Like, he kicked this... Like, Robert Downey kicked this fucking universe into high gear, and his character did too. And he, you know, he's been the heart and soul of the franchise. So,
yes, he has.
Yeah, and yeah, so it was a big scene.
So it's a nice little moment. They leave there, and then it's, well, who do we talk to now? And they go, we need a big brain.
You would have loved this scene, Stu, surely, coming up with the Hulk, and it's the changed Hulk.
Part of me loves it, and part of me hated it.
I was actually thinking in the cinema, because I didn't mind it, and you know how I feel about the Hulk. But it was the smart Hulk, but he wasn't that smart. He was just smart.
Well, you know, it's meant to be Banner. It's meant to be
okay.
Banner's intellect with the Hulk's body.
Oh, I thought it was the Hulk from the comics who's like the professor.
Same deal.
Okay. He's smart.
He basically spent, in those 5 years, he spent a year and a half, he said, in a gamma lab figuring out how to work with the Hulk. Because working in opposition, he figured out didn't work. Where the two would ultimately take over 100% from each other and block the other one out.
Did you think in the cinema, I wonder what Dave thinks of this Hulk? Because I thought of you. I was like, I wonder what Stu thinks of this because I quite liked it.
Oh, really? I wasn't thinking of you at all.
Oh, no, I did. I was just...
It's not a harsh thing. I was...
No, you know my views on the Hulk. You know, I like the Savage Hulk.
At no point did I think, oh, he's wearing a suit or, oh, he's wearing clothes. They made reference to it at one stage.
They did make a joke of it at one point.
I thought it was
quite good. I will say this, all my worries about the suits were completely overblown.
Yeah.
Like, they were...
When it comes to a suit in this movie, yeah, it's not a detail. They were just a time travel suit,
basically.
Yeah, which is what we said. We said it was going to be a quantum realm. I liked
this Hulk because it was a change, and I thought it was done well. Mark Ruffalo got a chance to shine, which he doesn't normally get.
Yeah, this is Mark Ruffalo properly acting for a whole movie,
and which hasn't happened for a long time. And it makes you remind you, Mark Ruffalo actually is a pretty good actor.
Like, but they went down the awkward, cheesy comedy route.
Oh, for sure.
Where you're meant to be watching it cringing the whole way through.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what that first scene was, when he's dabbing for the kids and doing the selfie.
I liked it, man.
You're like, it's just cringeworthy comedy, which is fine.
Sure. Yeah.
I felt it got a little overplayed.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, and Ray, by the way, I want to mention this, Ray from Into the Night, he loved this movie, Stu. Like, he gave it a 10. He felt maybe in the first act there was a bit too much comedy, and he's referencing things like this, you know.
Yeah, but I felt they needed to.
Yeah, so did I.
Like, this had a lot of emotional depth, and I felt they needed to lighten it up when they had the chance.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think you need to have those little miniature highs.
Some of it felt a little bit forced at times, but it was rare. And I think there were maybe one or two moments where I was like, no, a little on the nose, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was the Hulk we had, and Hulk has his own fucking idea of a time machine, and he completely fucks it up.
Well, I love that Hulk's basically saying, it's not my area, but I'll give it a shot.
Yes, because he's like, smart,
what,
too.
What the hell? If we can make a time machine work, I'm in.
And he tries, and unfortunately...
And we then get this brilliant little montage clip of them practicing.
Yeah, which was good.
Which was great. And kind of converting him to baby, to old man, to teen, to...
And it was all the same guy. And then finally he comes back and he's like, I think the kid...
I think someone peed my suit. Yeah. It could have been young me, old me, or just me.
Next scene, is it not Tony by himself in his farmhouse trying to work out the time machine? And he keeps saying stuff like, look, just... He's running through routines on the computer. He goes, no problem if it doesn't work out. And then he gets it, and he gets the time machine.
Well, he does that before we have the montage with Ant-Man.
Right. Does he? Okay.
Yeah, he's at home with Morgan at night.
Loved it.
Like, after that lunch...
Yes.
He then kind of just obsesses just a little bit.
And he can't help it. He's Iron Man.
That's who he is.
Tony Stark.
And he's running simulations, and he figures out that, what if we run time like a Mobius strip?
Yeah.
Why not?
It was cool.
He runs a simulation. That little moment where he's swearing in front of Morgan, I loved.
Good scene. Good scene.
I got important shit to do. It was one of my favourite lines.
Yeah, no, it was a good scene. There was a lot of chemistry between those two. I really liked...
It was a really touching little
moment. I really liked that little scene, actually. That was one of my... I really liked that scene. And he gets it. He gets the time machine.
He figures it out. And then we see Ant-Man suffering through body changes.
Yeah.
Tony comes driving in and basically says, he turned into a baby, didn't he? And they went, yeah.
Yep. He gets one long face to Cap.
Yeah. And it's the... What he says, which heavily... heavily gives them a back door, by the way, for the final scene of this movie.
Right.
Did you push time through Scott or Scott through time?
Right.
And they're reversing the aging process of Scott Lang.
Right.
You seeing where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I mean,
they've
given themselves a pretty big backdoor.
They've made the backdoor while also figuring out how to de-age people if they have to.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that tech now exists in this universe.
Dude, they've given themselves a couple of backdoors in this movie. More than two. They've given themselves, like, four backdoors. But that's a big backdoor, yeah.
This felt like a big way out. But that's good.
I like that.
Which I like, but...
You've got to be realistic in a business sense.
Look, to be honest, I don't think they're ever going to use it. I don't think it's ever going to come to that.
Maybe
but
not, but maybe as well.
The fact that there's that nugget of hope is enough for them to play with.
Yeah, and as I said to Ray, forever's a long... In Hollywood, like, forever's as long as they want it to last, you know? Yeah. No, I don't mind that at all. I think you've also got to give shreds of hope to audience members at times. Yeah,
exactly right, and I think that this is one of them. I think this is an intentional little nugget of hope.
Man, there's a lot of good scenes.
Where they've got aging and de-aging.
Have you noticed in this movie, unlike most, it's littered with good scenes that you're savouring.
But for me, it's the smallest scenes that make this film.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the tiny references that reward me as a fan for sitting through 10 years of movies.
For sure, man.
It's those little references that we get that we just love.
Yep, I feel it, dude.
So Tony comes back, he's figured it out, he's made the devices that strap to the back of their hands.
That's right.
Which we'd seen in the spoiler, behind the scenes footage, like, a year ago.
Right, okay.
We saw them all walking around with something strapped to their hands.
Uh-huh.
And we all kind of went, maybe that's part of the time machine.
Yeah, it seriously had leaked that they were doing the time machine stuff.
But it came out maybe a year ago, so we kind of knew this was coming, and it wasn't a surprise, but it also wasn't ruined.
No, it was cool.
It was still...
I was glad they were. I was like, I thought this opened up some really fucking cool ideas.
Cool part in the film. And then we get this... Tony gets the shield, gives it back to Cap.
Yeah.
Which he'd had since Civil War.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Where didn't Captain America throw it down?
At the end of that fight, he basically says, give me that shield.
Yeah.
Like, my dad made that shield. That's mine.
Yeah. Yeah, we gave it back to him, and he said before his, you know, daughter uses a sledding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he gives him back the shield, and then it's, I didn't bring enough for the whole team.
RDJ Smiles.
We are getting a team, though, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is when it starts, it picks up again, we go into heist mode.
Yes.
And we start seeing them recruiting for the team.
This was clever, because this was the inverse of Thanos doing the heists in... Remember, they were saying Infinity War was a heist thing of Thanos, remember?
I've been thinking about that. There was no heist element in Infinity War.
They said that, though.
You know? I think this was the heist they were talking about the whole time.
Okay, because this definitely was a heist.
This was absolutely the heist they rumoured a year ago as potential spoilers for Infinity War.
Yeah, a heist in the real, true sense, where you're running kind of scams and running fucking double decoys.
So this was that heist that they kind of dropped as a spoiler a year ago, and people just forgot about. I don't know whether they intentionally realised shit's going to leak, let's pretend it's for one movie and it's not.
Yeah, well, regardless...
Or whether it just worked out as a happy coincidence, but we're here now.
Yeah.
So we get Ronan in Tokyo.
Yes, just cutting loose.
We see him destroying what's left of, like, a Yakuza-style gang like that, in the streets of Tokyo.
And showing his complete disregard for life.
Yeah, but using a samurai sword or... some form of a katana.
I'll tell you something that I thought was interesting. So Natasha's behind him, and I thought at first from the camera work that she was carrying a sword, and then it's revealed to be an umbrella. Well, do you think that was an intentional trick of the camera, or was I just reading? It looked like she was carrying a sword just from the camera angle, then they panned out, and it was an umbrella.
It could have been. I knew it was her instantly.
Yeah, no, I knew that as well, but I thought she was carrying a sword. I was like, is she going to fight him here? I was surprised.
I mean, they fought before. They fought twice before,
But she was really just talking him around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they kind of have this moment where he's like, don't give me hope.
Mm.
And she said, I'm sorry it took me too long.
Jeremy Renner looking a bit flabby in this movie, I thought, in the face. Did you notice that?
I think he's meant to look old. I think he's meant to...
Oh, okay, maybe that's what they're going for.
It's meant to be, like, worn out and just... Like, he's not sleeping.
He's got the radical haircut.
He's got the kind of semi mohawk
edge, like, you know.
He's got the bags under the eyes with the mohawk. He's looking pretty cool.
He's got some tats going.
Yeah, he sleeved up. His whole left arm's now in a sleeve with, like, a...
Yeah.
It was like an image of death wearing a samurai armor.
yeah, kind of cheesy, but appropriate.
You know, very dark.
Yeah,
very,
he's going through a dark phase in his life.
He's clearly gone. This is his little goth phase that he's going through.
It really was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
This is when he goes and records his goth album.
Yeah, exactly right. This is his grunge look. So that was cool.
He gets talked around pretty fast, though, by Natasha, doesn't he?
Well, it kind of shows that if there's even a glimmer of hope that he can get his family back,
yeah,
he's all in.
Which makes sense.
It does. And it flashes back to that very first opening scene, just showing how lost he is without them.
And that's a good scene because I think a lot of the structure of this movie goes back to that, which is easy to put yourself in those shoes. What if we're sitting in this room and you vanish and Michelle vanishes and then the rest... And straight away I'm like, wow, I've lost my co-host and my partner. And then, you know, or the opposite.
I like that you think of me before Michelle. That's...
Well, you're on the
That's
room.
Comforting.
You're in the that's, fucking room. Yeah, that's I know. Yeah. And you're the co-host of the scene, or she's not. And then... But all the same. Like, you're sitting there and I go, and then your parents go, whatever. You know, like, it's very easy to put yourself in those shoes. And it's done well from that first scene. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And just the sense that you're... And it's not like a death on the road.
But the first act is all about loss.
Yes.
It is all about what everybody's lost and how they're coping or what they're doing to fill that void.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's entirely about loss. It's also setting up Iron Man, what he could potentially lose.
Yes.
Like, everything is about loss in this first arc.
Yeah, Iron Man is very much saying he will only do what Cap, you know, wants if he doesn't lose what he has gained.
Because he absolutely says, like, from the second he gets out of that car, he says, I'm going to set up my priorities.
Yeah.
And if I can help other people, that's great.
And straight away, you know, that's going to
happen. But I'm absolutely not going to risk my family.
He might as well say, in the climactic act, I'm going to have to face some big decisions.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm going to do anything to keep Morgan safe.
Yeah. And that's going to come up.
Yeah. Which is a little bit foreboding, but...
Yeah, it is what it is. This is wrapping up a huge saga, so, you know, they need to pay off these big moments.
Yeah. And then we get a brilliant, fantastic little happy little music soundtrack as Rocket and the Hulk travel to New Asgard.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Which I... This is one of my favourite, absolute favourite moments.
You like that scene where they go to the hippy-dippy commune kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's that little happy... It almost feels like a...
I think it's some...
Like a little indie movie.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a $20,000 budget kind of film.
I don't know who that singer is. Like a Monkees track or something from the 60s. Like an English-British band.
But it's super light and super poppy.
Oh, super fucking light. Super fucking Smoke of the Dope kind of, like, feel.
But it's fantastic. When they're driving through a little, like, remote countryside in what I'm assuming is Norway. Yeah. Or meant to look like Norway.
Sure. New Asgard.
And they get to New Asgard, which I thought was brilliant.
And it's the remnants of the Asgardians.
It's a little fishing village, and you can see they're building a massive cathedral.
Yeah.
And it's what's left of Asgard. And they confirmed that half of Asgard escaped.
Yes.
The other half got blown up when Thanos hit them.
Mm-hmm.
Then the snap took out what was left.
Right.
So there's only a quarter of Asgard left.
But wasn't, like, all the survivors of Asgard on the ship in Thor Ragnarok?
Yeah. So let's say all of Asgard made it on the ship, which
didn't happen.
But let's say they all got on the ship.
Yeah.
Half of them made it off in an escape pod kind of thing.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And that's where Valkyrie was.
I see.
And that's where Korg was and Meek.
Gotcha.
And the characters that weren't in Infinity War.
Got to say, great usage of Korg in this scene too.
So half of Asgard escaped.
Yeah, okay.
The other half was on the ship with Thor.
Yeah.
They all got blown up.
Yeah.
So they lost half of Asgard when the Power Stone was taken, and then the snap killed half of the survivors.
I was thinking about something
strange. So there's only a quarter of Asgard roaming around.
Which is still significant, but, like, yeah.
But they formed a little fishing village in New Asgard.
So at best, when it gets reversed, there's half of them left.
Well, they reversed the snap. They didn't reverse who got killed.
No.
Before the stones were formed.
Just half, though, then.
So they've now gotten back to what half of Asgard was in Ragnarok.
That escaped.
The escapees from...
Gotcha, okay. Which included Valkyrie.
Which included Valkyrie, Korg, and Meek. And
great character and sorely underused in this movie and probably just shit due to lack of space, I felt.
Yeah, she's still a new character.
I love her, though.
I think they rightly paid more time and respect to the older characters.
Agreed. And she did...
She got her moments. She got some great moments. She got a couple of good lines. Her line saying to Hulk... I think I liked you better in either of your other forms.
I love that line.
That's perfect.
She's a good actress. And
it summed up exactly what I was thinking.
Good actress and great role. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
Really nice meeting of a really good actress in a good meaty role
yep.
that I think she can do a lot with.
But yeah, running into her was a nice little...
I did think of you during this movie because I thought Stewie's going to love this scene.
I absolutely loved that scene.
He was hilarious.
They get into a little flat that it's just a dump.
It's a dump. Thor's boozing.
Thor's rocking the beer gut.
Yeah.
He's gone all out of shape.
Well,
he's basically got like dreadlockish kind of hair, bushy beard.
He's coping with the fact that like he failed and then killed Thanos, but didn't
he feels him. Like he failed and he had the opportunity to kill Thanos and he had the weapon to kill Thanos.
To be
and
honest,
he didn't.
If anyone should feel guilty, it should be Star-Lord. We all know that. Star-Lord was
we all kind of know that.
Like,
yeah.
You know, Star-Lord shows zero awareness of just how fucked up he fucked
but
up.
Thor was also how he got the first.
Yeah, if Thor had gone first for the gem, head.
Like,
if Thor had gone for the head.
Well, no. That's when he lost the Tesseract. Like, Thor lost to him on the ship. Then he lost to him in Asgard.
Yeah.
So Thor lost twice.
Yeah, Thor lost, yeah.
And this is him going through that, like, spiral. There's, like, pizza boxes, empty beer, cases and...
Yeah. Well, I did like that Korg and that was still having a good time on the internet. That was very...
And kegs.
That was very up my alley where they were just like...
They were on Fortnite and Marvel does have a Fortnite link.
That's good.
You can play as Thanos on Fortnite.
That's cool.
But I love that he was calling Korg a dickhead and Korg Noobmaster 69 was teasing him online.
Korg's very supportive.
Korg was brilliant.
Korg's funny. Like, he wasn't bagging out on Thor at all. Which I liked.
Oh, no, he was standing up for his friend. He was okay, we're safe
to be fair, I appreciated that from Korg.
Because they kind of removed themselves from the situation. They'd just gone, let's just go into isolation.
They pretty much went to the hippie commune and just like, it was, you know, if this had been a more adult movie, they would have been smoking massive dope.
You could imagine them smoking some weed.
Yeah,
but like there's a half
eaten... someone else there? Was it just Korg?
Meek was sitting on the couch.
Okay, right.
And, like, there's half-eaten boxes of wings and ribs and there's pizza and, like, it's just junk food and beer.
And Thor's kind of, he's kind of in denial and just...
And Thor gets a really comedic turn
in
this whole movie, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I thought it was a, considering, let's be honest, considering how physically, you know, perfect in a way Chris Hemsworth is and how muscly, and it's a big part of his appeal, he's such a handsome leading man. To go the other route that they went down is brave and it was done very well. And I thought it was played for comedy. And Hemsworth has shown he's got comedy chops. He showed it in Ragnarok. He's shown it elsewhere. It was done very well. And I think that was a rather brave choice by the filmmakers, considering they stuck with it through the entire movie. I thought it was done very well. I thought it was a... You know, I like it when a filmmaker makes a decision and they back up their play and it was executed well. And there'll be some people out there who'll be fucking pissing and moaning that Chris Hemsworth was played for comedy. But Hemsworth knows how to do comedy.
Hemsworth really does know how to do comedy. He's got great comedic timing.
Credit to him. He went against his type, which is strong, handsome leading man. We know that's a large part of Thor's appeal in these movies. A lot of...
There's very few people on the planet that can pull off a body like Chris Hemsworth can.
Exactly. So they went the opposite route, and it worked very well, actually, I thought.
It was played well. They did it well. They got to show off him... in a comedic role, which shines. He's brilliant at it.
Yeah, no, he's very good at that. And I think that's a credit to... That'll give him career longevity, I think.
We saw it in Ragnarok.
We did.
We saw glimpses of it in the terrible...
Ghostbusters
reboot.
One of the best things about that awful fucking movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's, an all-round leading guy now. He can do anything.
There you go. We all know he's doing Men in Black, Stu, so that's what he's doing.
He is, and there seem to be a lot of nods to Men in Black. Were you getting that?
I don't know.
Well, he's constantly wearing the kind of Ray-Ban sunglasses next to Valkyrie.
True, I suppose.
And you're kind of looking at them going, that's just Chris Hemsworth and Sonny's.
Advertising for...
we're just ready to go and roll into Men in Black.
But I am looking forward to that movie and the partnering of those two, because I think they are a very good duo.
I'm not looking forward to the movie, though.
Look, I mean, I think...
I'll catch it on streaming.
I enjoyed the franchise enough that I will see it. But I do like the duo and their chemistry.
I agree. So we kind of get the team together. We're all back. Hmm. By the way, Rocket this entire time is wearing his traditional costume from the comic books.
Okay.
The black and red overalls with the scarf.
Okay.
Is kind of what he wore in, like, when they first introduced
Rocket.
He's
voiced by Bradley Cooper, isn't he?
Yes.
Okay. I don't hear Bradley Cooper in his voice that much.
I suppose that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
But
I saw Bradley Cooper in something literally the other day. We watched The Mule. I saw him in that. Bradley Cooper turned up that. Good actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, look, we get the team together. Hawkeye then tests the time machine, which I felt was just rubbing salt in the wound.
Yeah, that was, yeah, like...
When Jesus he jumps Christ, back in time, like, and he's got just enough time to realise that his family's alive.
It's cool that he yells out for his daughter, and then she comes down, you know, and says, Dad, you know, like, it's a cool
stuff. Yeah.
She just misses him.
Yeah.
But it proves that, yeah, it was an odd choice for a test. I'm like,
but, I mean, he felt like, I've got nothing to lose, throw me in it.
Sure.
Because if I get lost in time, who cares?
Yeah, I don't even value my life at this
exactly point. Right. So, right choice, but...
Jaded.
That felt harsh that he had to relive the loss of his family twice.
Yeah, give him a little bit of extra
motivation. I actually thought that he was going to go back to the time to watch his family vanish.
That would be funny as well.
Like, I thought they were going to send him back 5 years and he's going to, like, get out of the barn and just watch his family vanish and him run around panic.
Yeah. But instead it was a real short little scene, but just to show that it worked.
Tiny little scene. He grabs a baseball mitt to bring back to show that it worked. And then we have this cool brainstorming session where they start piecing together the puzzle that we've all done as viewers.
Mm.
We've all figured out where the stones are. We know when the stones are.
Well, maybe not Dave, but...
Well, you were inhabiting the role of Ant-Man at this point, where he's like, yeah. I don't know what any of you are talking about.
Stu's explained it to me several times on text message, and I file and forget it, but it was good to know. That was a great scene. Yeah,
and it was well done, having Ant-Man there as the I don't know what you're talking about guy.
Yeah.
Because it meant if you haven't seen any of the movies... You've got a point of view.
Or if you're just more of a casual viewer. And you
if you're someone like Thor, who's really only come across one or two,
or if you're
okay.
Yeah.
But if you're someone that's up to date, you know where they all are. You know what they're going to figure out.
I loved it, actually.
And it's cool seeing them figure this stuff out.
It was cool seeing different people talking and them saying, oh, so at one point in time, three of them are in New York at the same time. And like,
yeah, Natasha realises that during the Battle of New York, there are three Infinity Stones within a few blocks of each other.
To be honest, I'm going to make a big comment. It's one of my favourite moments in almost any movies, but definitely superhero movies, this concept and the execution of it. It's up there with Iron Man 3 for how much I love it. You know, I will go back
and,
to this
movie. And this is also hugely rewarding and paying off the fact that Marvel have managed to keep a timeline consistent.
Yeah.
And not only consistent, but in real time. So when they travel 5 years back in their time, that's literally 5 years from now. 5 years back from now.
Right.
And they said 5 years ago and it shows up as 2014. Like, we know exactly when it is because it's when the movies were released.
Mm.
In our time.
Right.
So like when they say 2012 and they go to the Battle of New York, that's when Avengers came out.
Okay.
We actually get to see them go to the movies.
That's cool.
When they came out. It's,
well, isn't there famously... I mean, I've never done this year, but isn't famously some of the movies slightly different? Like, one of the Guardians movies is...
They threw a little bit of a spanner in Guardians 2.
Something like that, I heard.
It was slightly out, but then they kind of retconned it a little bit.
Sure. But I get your
point. That's one tiny inconsistency in 21 movies.
Oh, no, I agree. It's something
that was done so well. I mean, they paid attention early on, not knowing the payoff.
No.
Because they could have run it like the X-Men ran their universe.
Terrible.
Where you jump in time, different cast, and it doesn't really matter until you want to go back and self-reference, and then it falls apart.
X-Men is one of those things that if you pull up the strands, it completely falls apart.
But this tapestry has been so well constructed from the ground up.
The word is professional. Like, it's a professional.
They can do this. They can go... Let's go back 5 years, and everybody instantly knows 5 years ago was 2014.
All it takes is a murder
Guardians
board.
Guardians is coming out in cinemas. Yeah. We know what's going on.
All it takes is a murder board in Kevin Feige's office at the start. Like, when Iron Man 1 hits and does big numbers, and they start mapping, it's not that hard to do, but you just need to do it.
But I don't think they mapped it. I think they just made a decision day one and said, if there's a year between films, a year has passed in that universe.
Cool.
Where we're setting it up as if... These movies are in our universe.
Sure.
Time is one-to-one.
Yeah, okay.
And they haven't done weird time jumps. They haven't done anything like that.
It 100% worked.
It 100% worked.
And that was a really cool scene that you're referencing. So what's the first... They're split into teams?
So we see them figure out that in New York, you've got the time gem, you've got the space gem, and you've got the mind gem. Yeah. In 2012, Battle of New York.
Yes.
Avengers 1. We then go the ether, the reality gem.
Yep.
From Thor, the Dark World, shows up in Asgard.
Okay.
And when it's in Jane Foster,
uh-huh.
you can extract it. It's kind of achievable to receive.
Right.
Before then, it was kind of lost to time. It was an absolute fluke that Jane Foster found it.
Right.
Because Bor, Thor's grandfather, hid it.
Okay.
So they kind of realized where it was for a brief window
of time. Was that in Thor Dark World?
Well, in Thor Dark World, yeah. Jane Foster finds it by falling through a portal, a random portal.
Right.
Finds
it was just a fluke, basically.
And by the end of that movie, they basically destroyed it.
Okay.
So it was kind of a weird window opportunity. They figure out that during Dark World...
But that's what that whole conversation was about. And I'm sure when the scriptwriters were doing it, that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
When they were mapping all this shit out, where can we get it all going? Very clever, actually.
So they knew that Dark World had the reality gem.
Uh-huh.
Which they did give to the collector.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So there is another moment where they could... pick it up, but it's nice to go back to Asgard, which is now destroyed.
Yeah.
It's nice to see all those characters and lots
of stuff. Exactly, there's a lot of great...
It's well done.
There's some great moments with René Russo.
Uh-huh. And they realise that Vormir and Morag are the two planets where the Power Gem and the Soul Stone exist.
Yes.
And which is Guardians 1... And it's Infinity War.
Guardians 1, that famous scene with Thing.
The opening scene, the famous opening scene.
Yep.
So we break into teams. New York takes Cap, Ant-Man, Iron Man, and Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Like a big team.
Sure.
Vormir and Morag kind of ends up as a space team. Rhodey, Nebula, Hawkeye, and Natasha.
Yep.
And then Asgard, we get Thor and Rocket.
Sure.
Teaming up to go there.
Good little team, those two.
They're all solid teams.
Yeah, very solid.
Yeah.
And then we then run through each...
We then go through the heist moments.
Yeah.
Where we get a nice look back at the movies and a nod to the past.
I loved... Can I reference my favourite ones were the New York one?
New York was fantastic.
I love New York.
America's Ass was a great line.
Oh, it was such a good scene.
Hulk ripping his shirt off saying it feels gratuitous and then acting
as if... To be fair, I laughed hard.
Funny. I laughed at that. That was good.
That a lot. And then him doing the imitation of Angry Hulk.
Yeah.
That was cool. And the fucking... Dude, the part where Cap got... basically, where you see the Hydra agents, like, is it Sidwell?
Sitwell, Rumlow, Crossbones.
When they
I love
in.
That they're all in the elevator, and there's this moment where you're like, is this a Winter Soldier?
Yeah.
Before we kick off, does anyone want to get out?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that, and then we get that moment from the comic books, straight from the comic books.
Yeah.
Where he leans over and just goes, Hail Hydra.
Which worked.
And they're like, shit, Cap's on our
side. That's called by clever filmmaking.
That's clever. Yeah. That was so well done, wasn't it?
Yes. And do you remember when Captain Marvel came out, I said to you, I was somewhat surprised they didn't hint at Hydra being within S.H.I.E.L.D., considering how much of S.H.I.E.L.D. was involved in the Captain Marvel movie. Well, I got my wish granted in the next fucking movie, which is this one.
Yes,
I love that scene. That scene, actually, for me, really had a lot of payoff. I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
And also...
There were audible gasps in the cinema, though.
It was cool.
Which I thought was great.
Yeah, well, as soon as I saw
that they're so
Sidwell and Crossbones, I knew we were going down that road.
Yes.
And I was like, thank God they're doing this.
But I think, but people were, because they set it up exactly like they did the elevator scene from Winter Soldier.
Yes.
So people were expecting doors to open and Cap's the only one standing.
Yeah. But instead,
we got that very clever subversion of expectations where he just Hail Hydra his way out of
it. Can I say a cool subversion as opposed to a Rian Johnson subversion?
A very well done subversion.
Yeah. Also, Stu, I want to point out...
Meanwhile, we get the final scene from the Avengers kind of recreated.
Well, how about this? The scene... I have this in my notes. The scene in the lobby with Loki. Loki escapes. Escapes with a gem. So he's free and okay, I assume, for other movies.
Yeah, yes and no. It's weird.
Well, put it this way. He escapes with a gem. Or something. He escapes with something, doesn't he?
Oh, he takes the Tesseract.
Yeah.
And portals out of it.
I mean, my point is that it is definitely a get-out clause. We know that Loki's doing a TV series with Scarlet Witch.
Well, look, this is effectively him creating a little branch in time.
And isn't that famously what Loki... I mean, Loki's cheated death many, many times in comics. Yeah. So I like this. I think it gave Tom Hiddleston... He's one of the favourite actors.
It was one of the perfect moments as well. Him just looking down, realising... Bends down, picks up, and instantly just steps backwards through a portal.
Very Loki-like.
Looking so suspicious. It was brilliant.
Don't forget, he's the god of mischief. What I liked was... It wasn't until after the movie when I was kind of mulling over, I was like, oh, Loki got away.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool. Like, I mean, it wasn't even really... No one even mentioned it.
Like, no, just kind but of just, Loki is alive now.
Yeah.
No good. Longer dead on the spaceship.
Yeah. So that was cool. I wanted to mention that one to you because...
Although it is in a branched universe. So it's not in the MCU.
But I'm sure he could just turn up. Don't you think?
Well, it's separate universes. If you want to travel through a multiverse, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's alive in another version.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, that was just a little thing which I liked.
Yeah, it's a cool little moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the Hal Hydra stuff. Probably equal to... That was an awesome fucking scene. But Thor on Asgard was great.
Rene Russo was a brilliant scene.
Rene Russo, a very accomplished actress.
And underused in Thor.
Underused in Thor, but she's a great actress. And watch Ransom. Go watch... what's the movie she did with Jake Gyllenhaal? I forget what it's called right now. A lot of good movies Rene Russo's done. But she had a great scene where she said to Thor, I grew up with witches. I can see.
Yeah, which we knew. Like, she'd raised Loki.
Yeah.
And she taught Loki all of the stuff that she grew up on.
Sorcery.
Odin was teaching Thor. So Thor learned, war. He learned strategy. He learned how to battle.
Yeah.
And Loki was learning witchcraft. And it was a cool...
And I love that she goes, the future has not been kind to you, has it? And you're not the Thor I knew at all. But she says it in a loving way. And and she even says, you're here to change your future, not mine.
And the fact that she kind of hints that she already knows that's the day she dies.
Yes.
And she's made peace with that.
That's very witch-like.
It's very cool.
And one of the cool moments, Stu, and this is something that I thought was fucking wicked, was when Thor called the hammer.
And he grabs the hammer. That was a really cool moment, though, right?
It was great. I mean,
not only is he worthy, which he was...
Doubting.
That's part of his redemption, then.
Because his hammer got destroyed in Ragnarok, right?
Hela. Yeah. Just shattered it with her hands.
Did you think there was going to be any... We'd not heard anything about it. Did you feel there was going to be any appearance of Hela in this movie at any point?
I hadn't heard anything.
No, I'd heard nothing about Kate Blanchett being involved.
It wouldn't have surprised me if they'd tried to bring her back.
Did you get the feeling that outside of some of the very obvious franchises they're trying to set up, there's also quite a lot of room in stuff like Thor to go on after this movie? I didn't get the feeling that, like... A lot, not everyone's storylines are completely dead. Like,
oh no, far from
there's
it.
There's a lot of going on actually in the Marvel Universe at the moment, isn't there? Which is good.
I mean, this movie was set up to end the first arc for the first six.
Yeah,
and it's kind of there to give them, if they're still alive and roaming around.
Yeah,
it's an entirely new character. It's an entirely new arc.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me to see a Thor movie after this.
I've got some news that I'm going to put in.
Oh, cool.
As part of the spoiler review, it's heavily spoiler.
Yeah, okay.
Which is what I didn't put into the show notes because I was worried you were going to read it before you went into the cinema. Yeah.
Cool.
So
yeah, that was a great scene in Asgard, and then we have the space stuff going on.
Yeah. So Morag was a fun nod to the Guardians opening.
Mm-hmm.
Where we see him singing along for the first time.
Which is cool when we're hearing
without the music, and it's just funny.
And Cheadle's like, so he's just a loser.
So he's an idiot.
Yeah.
That was good.
And just like fucking knock him out.
Yeah, just knocks him out with one hit. They steal
Cheadle get some lines.
Yeah.
Great actor.
Yeah. They get the power gem in the orb.
Yeah.
And then we have the first kind of twist from the film. Because until that point, everything had gone to plan, very linear.
Sure.
It was very user-friendly.
Yeah, it felt like they were getting away with it pretty nicely, I thought.
And then all of a sudden, they have this twist where Nebula's a network. She's a computer.
Yeah, they sort of.
And if there's two of them in the same time, same place, they can link. They can talk to each other.
I want to make mention of something to you, which was a little snippet I noticed. There was an early scene with Nebula talking to Gamora in the past, okay, when she was, like, evil Nebula. But she actually said to Gamora, you realize what will happen if he gets all the stones. And she shows some semblance of concern of Thanos' plan being achieved. Did you see that?
Well, she always copped the brunt of his wrath.
Yeah.
Nebula was always the project that he would keep working on and punish when she didn't perform.
She's like cyber.
Gamora was the golden child.
Yeah. But I just thought it was interesting that Nebula did mention one moment and then Thanos comes in and she bows to him. Very subservient.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is interesting.
But, I mean, that was after she'd had that first... Well, that was as she'd having that vision, kind of.
Right.
Where she'd hooked into the other Nebula.
Yeah, that was interesting. And so Thanos then basically becomes aware of the plan.
Yeah, and you realise there's this twist that Thanos now can figure out what they're doing.
I liked that Thanos... We got to see him.
That Thanos had a double agent. Thanos had a version of Nebula that was still loyal to him.
Yes.
That looks almost identical to the Nebula that's loyal to
him. Yeah, he could insert that into the story.
And there was a cool double agent kind of twist that we knew was kind of coming.
Hmm.
But that was the first moment in the film where...
We knew, but the characters...
We had a twist and we knew it was coming.
Yes. Yeah. Good point. And maybe poor planning, in fact, by whoever sent the space team up there. You know, really. Really, Nebula should have known that she was on the network.
Well, I mean, the argument is that Nebula knows where Vormir is.
Uh-huh.
And only her and Gamora knew Vormir.
Okay. Is that the one with Red Skull?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And that was the kind of moment where some people were starting to realize if you're getting the Soul Stone, there's only one way to get the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
If you're not stealing it from Thanos.
Yeah.
Then you're getting it from Red Skull.
Through the sort of like.
Through the sacrifice.
Life for a life kind of thing.
Yeah.
And famously, he sacrificed Gamora for it.
Yeah.
You've got to sacrifice someone you love, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Hawkeye.
Which means they had to send a pair of people that had passed, that had a relationship.
Yeah. And but they didn't know that. The Avengers didn't know that. Like, Captain...
No, they knew that Thanos went there
with
his daughter and came back with the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
But they didn't necessarily know that they traded one.
I don't think they knew the cost. And then...
I feel like Nebula may have.
She may have, yeah. She definitely may have. But I meant the Cap and et cetera.
No. Yeah. No. But, I mean, even if they did, that's why Ronan went there.
Yeah, well, Ronan's got a death wish.
Because he's obviously unsuited to space travel.
Yes.
Like, he would have been far better off in New York or Asgard.
Sure. Well, Ronan's a guy with nothing to lose.
And we all kind of thought going in, we'd seen his family die, we'd seen him be close to suicidal on this mission in Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
He's ready to jump off his ledge.
Oh, for sure, man, yeah. He's where the Punisher is half the time, you know? Like, mentally.
And we get the kind of recall back to them fighting each other in Avengers 1.
Also, at times, was it some good... Like, it was good...
Well, the opening scene where she's made the sandwich and she's running HQ and she breaks down.
Yeah.
We knew that she was a woman on the edge.
For sure. For sure. On the edge where she's got to be. And then, so, basically... But
we get the reference to them fighting in Avengers 1 where they brawl.
Yes.
And Civil War where they also come across each other.
Yeah, that's right. That was a good fight, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing personal.
Yeah, exactly right. Depends on how hard you hit me. We're still friends, right? Depends on how
that was a good scene in Civil War, actually. Anyway, and I really like the scene where it's the flipping of who's going to die.
And you think, like, when he's shot the arrow that blows up, Natasha's lying on the ground, like, ringing in the ears.
It's good. Well,
and you see Hawkeye running towards the edge. You just think he's just going to jump.
Yeah, but she had one final sting in the tail.
And, yeah, she gets him.
And even when they're flipping down, it was a really well-directed scene.
A very well-done scene.
Yeah. And
because I think most people in that cinema had no clue who was going to die until...
Point toss.
Until Natasha was hanging on by a hand.
But that's the best kind of filmmaking, and someone like Hitchcock could do it, where it's a coin toss of what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's so rare in modern cinema, and that's almost completely unknown in superhero movies.
Absolutely.
It was a beautiful moment in filmmaking, and I give the Russo brothers all the credit for that. That was fantastic. And you're right. You don't know, and you don't really know who you want to either. You know, no, Natasha's probably the slightly more popular character.
At this point, they'd made it very clear that either character was willing to die.
Yes.
And that it's emotionally impactful.
Yes.
Regardless of who dies.
Exactly. Because they built
the They set this up perfectly. They showed both of them are on the edge. They showed both of them have nothing to lose.
Okay, I'm going
to
ask you a question, Stu. So finally, Natasha falls down. We get the death scene, very similar to Gamora at the bottom. And
yes.
She's lying there. So,
In fact, almost perfectly mirroring the same pose and everything.
Question, Stu. Jumping to basically the end when I think Hulk said he tried to bring her back.
Yeah.
Do you think there's potential that... We know there's a movie coming, and supposedly it's an Origins movie.
It is an Origins movie.
But do you think...
And we now know why.
Any perspective, any chance that that comment by Hulk may actually reintroduce her at some point?
No. They've tried to remain consistent that the rule of the Soul Gem...
Right.
...is that you can't...
Okay, so it will be fully an origin.
It's an unreturnable kind of trade.
I'm still totally open to a Black Widow, Scully Hansen.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to see an origins film. I'd love to see more about the Red Room.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Budapest, whatever happened in Budapest that they've referenced a few times.
Yeah. Okay, so there's plenty of room there. I just wanted to ask you that question because Hulk did say that. Him saying that, I was wondering if...
the fact that he had the power of the Infinity Stones...
Yeah.
...and he tried and he still couldn't...
It means that it's irreversible.
It's...
Hey, and look, some death sticking, like in comics, if a death sticks, and it really should stick like Uncle Ben, it can really work.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Uncle Ben should never come back. Jean Grey came back too often, and it diluted the character, you know?
Yeah, there's a few characters... I mean, comic books are bad.
When it comes to
people coming back from the dead, you're never going to see...
But these are comic book movies, and Hollywood is a mercenary beast, you know? Ruled by box office receipts.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's...
And they've given... And like you said before, they've given themselves many outs with a lot of characters.
So thank you for answering that question, though. So you feel it's a complete... I think
this is... In the same way that they couldn't bring back the Gamora that died.
No, they brought back a Gamora from the past.
Another version of Gamora is now in the MCU.
And reset the stakes, really, in terms of her relationship with Star-Lord.
Exactly right. But... The Gamora that died on Vormir is still dead.
I'm going to make a comment right now, Stu. My official score is a 9.5. And as I said before, and this may be my favourite comic book movie of all time.
It's so up there.
I'm a bit of a harsher marker in things even I love. I still see flaws in. There are a couple of small things I have later on.
I don't think there's such thing as a perfect... film.
Oh, this isn't it. I've got small things in the
and there are little details here and there that I'm kind of not happy.
This is close.
But this film made me feel happier and sadder, and I laughed more.
Perfect movies. I'd say North by Northwest.
I was more invested than almost anything else.
Yeah. No, I agree. I haven't felt so much impact in a cinema in years and years and years.
Yeah, I've heard it described. It's not the perfect film, but it's a perfect movie.
Yeah,
I've heard people say that. Where it's
true. Well, it's popcorn.
If you're watching it for enjoyment, there's very little better. If you're watching it from the point of view of a film critic,
but
I completely understand giving this a lower mark. I totally get that.
Look, and I do look with a critical view, but it succeeds on so many levels. The fact we're going through it scene by scene, and there's so many strong moments inside these scenes.
It's the little moments.
You're right. And that's the key, though, that's making this better than the normal.
Yes, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. The time heist succeeds. They all wind back up at Avengers HQ.
Yeah.
They have that realization that Nat's not coming back.
Yeah, that's a bit of a gut punch.
And they're all kind of by the lake.
And a lot of people had relationships with her, like Cap had a relationship with her, Hulk had a relationship with her.
Yeah, and there's a cool moment where Thor...
And I don't mean sexual, I mean they had friendships and deep relationships, you know?
No, and it's a moment where Thor basically acts as the viewer does, which is, we've got the Infinity Stones, why not just bring her back?
Yeah, well, fair enough.
And it's kind of the question that you asked as well.
Fair question.
Yeah, exactly right. But it's putting you in the place of the audience.
But unfortunately, the trade was... You know, not
a soul for a soul. You can't then replace itself.
Sure. What do you think about Red Skull? I think it's a stupid usage of Red Skull on that fucking island. I don't understand why they picked Red Skull out of all people to be that friendly fucking ghost. It's weird. It's a weird decision. That's a decision that's on Marvel and on Foggy that I don't think's ever been explained well.
Well, I mean, we saw him basically vanish at the end of Cap.
Yeah, but why
using the space?
Why plane? would fucking maniac Nazi Red Skull become friendly Red Ghost? I don't quite understand it.
Well, he was changed by the Soul Stone.
Okay,
he's now basically a slave to the Soul Stone.
Do you just think it's just a way to use Red Skull, like just to throw a bone out to audiences?
Well, look, they basically had two options. Uh-huh. They had use a character that we know.
Yeah.
In which case, there was very few options.
Or create a new one.
Or create a brand new one, which was just the gatekeeper.
I actually forgot that he was that when I saw
and
that,
I'm sure
like,
they
and it's not voiced by Hugo Weaving, is it?
It's not. Yeah. They very easily could have thrown in the gardener or some kind of
someone
cosmic hero like that.
Yeah.
And everyone would have gone, okay, but it's kind of a throwaway moment.
If you're Hugo Weaving, would you have walked away from that paycheck? Because I think it's one of the stupidest decisions he's ever made in his life. To me, that's easy money. I'd walk in and do that voice work in a heartbeat. You know? I can't believe Hugo Weaving walked away from that deal.
I don't think he had a great time in Cap.
But, okay. Did the check clear? Yes.
Yeah, like, he's not hurting for cash.
Is he that busy, though?
Like he's not hurting for cash.
Okay. I'm just surprised that if I'm him and they say you've got to voice this character, it's going to take like less than a day. I wonder.
Put it this way: I'm honestly surprised that so many people came in to do what must have been one day, worth of shooting. Like someone like Jane Foster's original scenes, which was her getting out of a bed with.
Did she shoot new footage?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay, I was wondering because I was surprised Natalie Portman, who's shown no interest in the Thor franchise in years,
no, and who honestly does consider herself
or in Star Wars
above.
She shows no interest in the Star Wars franchise and no interest in the Thor franchise.
No, for her it was a movie that she did. It's a paycheck, and now it's over. But and I respect that. That's fine.
I respect it, but clearly they managed to cut that deal because they did show a significant scene. I was wondering if there was new footage there.
To be honest, when they come to you and say this is going to be the movie.
Yeah.
The biggest movie there has ever been, potentially. Certainly the biggest movie of
this year. But she's completely not open to appearing in Thor again, apparently. She's given every indication of not doing another Thor movie.
Well, the character wasn't good in Thor. It wasn't well
done. It wasn't great. It wasn't great.
She was the swooning girlfriend. Like, it's a terrible role for an independent
woman. Yeah, I agree. It wasn't great, especially for an Oscar, you know, considered actress as she is.
For Oscar winner. Won Best Actress.
Yeah, but I think, I'll go on record right now, I think Natalie Portman has a bad record of spitting in fans' faces on franchises such as Thor and Star Wars. And I think she should remember that she used those roles to get to prominence. You know, frankly. That's my honest opinion.
I don't think she used them to get to prominence that much.
She did. She wasn't that big before Phantom Menace. Natalie Portman was not a big actress before the prequels. She was around, but like she wasn't huge.
True, but she's heavily featured in the worst and second worst of the main Star Wars movies.
Who cares? She's in Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. Yeah, she's not great in them. She wasn't great material. But regardless, she rose to prominence behind them. She became a Hollywood name behind them. And then went on to do more indie movies.
She'd done a lot of indie movies where she got more acclaim and cred from the
rest of Hollywood. I'm not saying she's not a good actress, but I think she shows a disrespect to fans, basically. That's my
Don't. I think she's made a decision, and that's her decision to make.
It's her decision to shoot. But regardless, hey, guess what? The money must have fucking cleared because she turned up for this one. You're saying anyway. I was questioning, was it original footage or was it...
may have been unused footage from Dark World.
We should really get the intern on this, Stu. You know what? Next week I'm going to have a fucking answer on this one.
Have been old footage, and that may have happened a couple of times because there are a few moments where a character shows up for literally one scene.
Regardless, it was good to see her, and it was a well done scene. And to be honest, but you noticed she wasn't in it much. There was the cutaway.
Wasn't meant to be. It's a single scene. Same as Loki was in the dungeon throwing the cup up and down.
Yeah.
That scene was most likely unused footage from Dark World.
Sure.
But who knows? It was a different angle.
Mm.
You know, it. Well, they had Tom Hiddleston filming those new scenes with picking up the Tesseract.
And in New York, when they were in the circle, they were new footage there, wasn't it?
That was new footage, yeah.
So that was cool how they
recreated that. Because he's repeating that line, if it's okay with you, I'll get that drink now.
Yeah.
Another angle.
Yeah, I think that was really clever that they did that kind of stuff.
Yeah. No, it's the old costumes. It's the people that did continuity did a good
job. How fucking cool was Cap fighting Cap?
Yeah, that was great.
I love that fucking fight. I'm always up for those kind of fights. And I've got a question for you, Stu. What was he saying that made the 2012 Cap hesitate? What was he saying? I didn't quite hear what he said.
He said Bucky is alive.
Right, that's what I thought he said. I was thinking about it afterwards. Who was alive? Surely it was Bucky, but I didn't quite hear it in the cinema.
Yeah, Bucky is alive.
Okay, and which caused him to...
Cap kind of releases a little bit, and then one hit to the face.
Yeah, and then he's like, that really is the ass of America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good line. Okay, so where are we, Stu?
So we've had the time heist.
Yes.
We've had now Nebula's switched places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we know it's evil Nebula.
Yeah. We know that's going to come back to bite.
And basically we see the Avengers put the gauntlet together. They put the stones into an Iron Man gauntlet.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Nebula's in another room summoning the time machine.
Yep.
And we know that Thanos has a vial of Pym particles ready to go.
Yes.
So he's ready to come to the present. She's bringing Thanos in and Thanos' armies.
Yeah.
Because he's just packed his whole ship.
It was cool to see Thanos be a credible threat without the stones. Because remembering, he hadn't had that much play other than being a big-part player.
He'd conquered worlds.
Yeah, but it was good to see him.
He'd done the 50% on any planet he'd visited up until that point.
I told you that I always have disliked... at times, the fluctuating power levels of Thanos in the comics. Like, Infinity by Hickman, Thanos is just in a prison cell, just fucking doing
nothing. Well, the other thing is, remember that Thanos got the power gem...
Yeah.
...by literally walking into the Nova Corps headquarters on Xandar...
Yeah.
...and just decimating it.
Yeah.
And that was a planet that, you know, Ronan tried and failed.
Yeah.
And he walks in there and fucks it up.
No, interesting, man.
And then he takes on gods, literal gods...
So I was kind of thinking there might have been Novas in this, but there was no appearance of Novas in this
book. I didn't see any. I didn't see any Nova Corps.
No, I kind of had my eye out for them, you know?
I was trying to look through the battle scenes for different armies.
Captain Marvel said, I know people who might know. Remember she said that when she was going to fly off? And,
yeah, so, I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, the Skrulls and the Kree all have networks. They all know.
Yeah.
I mean, Ronan works for Thanos. Gotta be honest, dude. And she knew Ronan very well.
I only gave Captain Marvel an 8 out of 10, and I stand by it, but I'm still excited a lot by the potential of Captain Marvel and these movies.
Oh, for sure.
And you know me, I'm not that hot on the character in the comics, but I think this Brie Larson's got what it fucking takes.
Brie Larson's a fantastic
I go a lot on how
Marvel did so well when they signed her.
But they did well with Robert Downey Jr. They did well with Cheadle. They picked well with Chris Evans. 100%. Like, you know, like...
I mean, don't get me wrong, they've made mistakes.
Yeah, they've made mistakes. Hey, they picked Terrence Howard, and they replaced him with Cheadle.
They picked Terrence Howard. That was a mistake.
Terrence Howard, who thinks the world's flat. Terrence Howard, who backed Jussie Smollett, where his fucking name is. Like, Terrence Howard, who's a fucking joke.
They picked the Hulk. That was a mistake.
Who was the original? It was, Ed Norton.
Ed Norton.
Ed Norton had a complicated time on that movie. Ed Norton's a good actor.
But they replaced with Mark Ruffalo, who was a brilliant pick.
Great.
They've made mistakes. They've made missteps, but they've also had absolute wins.
It's how you recover from missteps, though, as well.
Yeah.
You know?
But ever since Gen 1, they've also had the pulling power of, hey, we've made 6 connected movies that are all good.
Yeah, and they've all made money.
And all of a sudden, people are saying, yeah, sign me up.
And they've all helped the actors' careers.
Oh, yeah, they have.
And there's a lot of hungry actors out there who get put me in a Marvel movie to their agent.
So we get, Hulk snapping the fingers.
That was pretty cool.
Very cool moment where he puts the gauntlet on, the power's surging through him, and we see Hulk, like, struggling.
Mm. Well, he said it was mostly gamma radiation, didn't he?
Yeah, so he was the one most likely to survive.
Mm. And they hadn't really
And remembering that, like, Thanos used the gauntlet the first time and it charred him badly.
Mm.
But Thanos also beat the Hulk pretty badly in a fist fight.
He fucking dominated
like,
the Hulk.
Very. So Thanos is more powerful than the Hulk, toe-to-toe, unassisted.
Yes, which is
And rare. Thanos was very badly damaged by using the gauntlet the first time.
Yeah.
So I liked that it was consistent in that Hulk was really badly damaged.
Did you find it interesting that this film didn't explore why Hulk wouldn't turn into Hulk in Infinity War?
Well, they reference it in that Hulk and Banner were kind of warring personalities.
But I felt at the time that it was because Hulk was afraid. Because he'd been beaten so badly. That's how I read it.
Well, yes, but it was also that it felt like Banner was just throwing him at unbeatable wars.
Right.
Like, oh, shit's hitting the fan.
Cool.
Tag out. You can deal with the worst of the worst.
Gotcha.
And I'll deal with the picnics in the park later.
Yeah, I gotcha.
You know,
yeah,
so, Hulk's constantly getting the rough end of the deal.
Yeah, okay.
He only ever gets playtime when it's the worst of the worst.
Okay, cool.
So they're kind of warring personalities, which they kind of managed to
figure
out
and combine. Do you think it's going to stick, though? Do you think this will be the Hulk that I think the whole thing about Hulk is change, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they're going to play with it a bit.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, I loved the moment. And again, something that they spoiled a year ago as a potential thing for Infinity War, when the Ancient One pushed Banner out of the Hulk.
That was cool.
Very cool moment.
It was also cool that she knew that Stephen Strange was going to become her.
Yeah.
And she said that's 5 years ago. That was actually a really
That was thing. Actually the coolest Ancient One moment that we'd ever had.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, look, I'm no...
Like, watching her in Doctor Strange, I felt like, fine, Tilda Swinton did a good job, but I was never like, man, the Ancient One is cool.
No.
But this little glimpse of her...
Yeah.
Basically sniping down rogue Chitauri...
Better directors, better material.
And then all of a sudden she's like, oh, you're 5 years too early.
And she did the little
and
timeline.
And recognised, yeah.
You know, explaining it for the dumbos like me at home who needed explained, you know?
But it was really well done.
I really liked that scene.
But when she just palms the Hulk and watches the Hulk collapse and
why don't we start this again?
Floating there and you're like, that's cool.
And I liked that she realised that Strange gave it away and that made her reconsider her position.
Yeah, because he was the best of it. That was a brilliant line.
And she goes,
he was meant to be the best of us.
For a moment, I thought she made a mistake in choosing him and thought, could there have been a villainous turn by Strange? But I didn't think that was likely.
Well, she did for a moment there.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like, have I made a terrible mistake? And then she kind of realises that he gave it away willingly.
Yeah. So it was part of a grander scheme.
Because if he'd kind of given it away begrudgingly or to save himself,
I've got a question
something.
For you. Michelle's cousin James has asked me to ask you a question, which I'll ask at the conclusion regarding the Infinity Gauntlet, Stu. I'll toss that in. It's related to this kind of discussion.
Sure.
Okay, so moving on, Stu, where are we?
Thanos has his ship. Mm-hmm. It's over New York.
Mm.
He's now in the present.
Mm.
They've snapped their fingers. Hawkeye's family is calling him on the phone.
Yeah, that's right. Everything's good for a half a second.
And you have this moment of kind of bliss, ignorant bliss, when Ant-Man's looking at the birds.
Yeah.
It's something that they hadn't put in, like, intentionally removed all animals from
Foggy
the film.
Foggy did say that half the animals died too.
Half the creatures died. And then he's standing there and there's just birds flying in a tree. And there's kind of this peace and tranquility. And then this missile.
Yeah.
Just come screaming
into
the mansion.
Straight out of the writer's handbook, sometimes you just need to blow everything up. And that's exactly what
you have the calm before the storm as well.
Yeah. And sometimes the best thing to do in a script is you put everyone in one room and you fucking blow it up and see what happens. And that's what they did.
It's exactly what they did.
And it worked. It worked. Like, cliche for a reason. You know, like.
Yeah.
No, it was a very effective moment of the movie. I thought, oh, okay. Yeah.
And that's when you know we're in the final act.
Sure.
This is the home stretch now. This is where the big guns come out to play.
Can I say this? Three hours, 5 minutes, I didn't even feel it. I fucking...
The first, say, 45 minutes to an hour, I felt was slow.
Sure.
It was really well done. I loved moments of it.
Yeah.
But I was aware that it was a slow-paced opening.
Slower pace than normal as well.
But once you got past the first act...
Yeah.
It moved at a great pace.
How many times have you seen this, Drew? Just the once or?
Four.
Fuck, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm seeing it again this weekend at some point.
It's good. It's worth multiple viewings.
It's worth it, man.
You see more Easter eggs, you see...
What are you doing? Like, I don't understand this. You're working, you're catching fucking movies like four times, man. Is it parallel Stews reporting in for duty or what's going on? Like,
it's all me, man. I've just had to sacrifice sleep. That's...
By the way, Stu shaved off what I consider a Let It Be Paul McCartney beard. And was this part of a sort of purge for this movie, Stu?
It felt like Cap and I were just in sync, you know?
Yeah.
We both rock up day one clean shaven and
wow-ee.
Let's see where it goes.
I love it, man. I love it. Whereas I'm on the fucking ranch with the stubble, dude. I'm just like Neil Young recording an album in the mid-70s, smoking doobies, fucking just real
the hippie,
loose.
The hippie beard.
Real loose and rustic, man. Okay, continue, dude.
I mean, when Hawkeye picks up the phone and he starts like crying and talking to Laura, that was a brilliant little moment.
Good scene.
And then we kind of wake up in this almost post-apocalyptic, shell-shocked crater.
Sure.
After Thanos has just unleashed...
Well, those missiles were fairly fucking significant.
A rain of fire on the compound. we see them basically wake up one by one with a few of them trapped.
Hulk doing the famous lifting. Straight out of Secret Wars.
Exactly right. Hulk famously lifting I mean, in the comics, it's a mountain.
Yeah, but
in this, it's Avengers HQ, basically.
Yeah, I fucking dug that, man, to be honest.
Ronan's managed to fall into some underground tunnel.
Everyone fell pretty fucking luckily.
I know.
Yeah.
I was actually a little disappointed no one died in that explosion.
I thought for a moment there'd certainly be a death, but everyone kind of had the lucky.
I half wanted there to be a death just so it felt impactful.
Yeah.
But the only person it really could have been would have been Rocket.
I wouldn't want a Rocket
to die. And I didn't want Rocket to die.
I didn't want Rocket to die, man. I like Rocket.
I love Rocket.
And they're never going to kill Rocket, dude.
But that felt like the only franchise. That felt like the only character that had room to die in that scene.
Sure. Sure. But anyway, regardless, everyone kind of luckily.
Rhodey in a damaged suit, so he's now crippled Rhodey.
Yeah, yeah.
Like crawling on his stomach, doing an army crawl.
He still managed to push it off Rocket, didn't he?
He uses his body weight to lever off her.
Good on you, Cheadle. Fucking putting in big time.
Saving Rocket, who can't breathe.
Yeah. I think it was a conscious decision movie to give Cheadle some more lines.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So the three of them are kind of huddled in this, like, crater, the Hulk holding onto the building on top of them.
Yeah.
As Ant-Man wakes up and basically goes to their rescue.
That's right.
Ronan wakes up in some underground tunnel with the gauntlet.
I want to say Paul Rudd very good in this movie too, by the way.
Paul Rudd's brilliant in this.
Yeah. Paul Rudd's a good actor. Like, I'm not an Ant-Man fan, but he makes a lot of what's a pretty shit role.
He's so charismatic.
He's a very likable actor.
He can carry a lot of screen time.
He can. And he has done in his career. He's shown that.
Yeah. And Ronan also shoots the arrow, and we get to see the Outriders. Mm. The swarming army from Infinity War.
Yeah.
And there's kind of like dozens of them climbing on the walls, crawling towards him in this crater.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a horror-esque moment.
On the run.
Where he's sprinting away. He ends up slicing them all in half when he's using the ropes to get out.
It was pretty cool, actually.
Very cool little moment. Meanwhile, the big three wake up. Cap gets his shield.
Yep.
Iron Man gets his suit on.
Yep.
Thor's the first one up and kind of just assessing the scene.
Uh-huh.
Thanos is just chilling, sitting there with his giant-ass sword, just waiting.
Yeah, that's right. He literally says
waiting, I'm just waiting, because they'll come to me. A brilliant, brilliant moment where Thor goes, we're all on the same page? Okay. Both hands out. Mjolnir and Stormbreaker come flying in.
Yeah.
The lightning hits. Instant hair transformation. Did you notice?
Mm-hmm.
The beard gets plaited.
Mm.
The hair goes... He looks very Viking-esque.
For sure.
So he looks the light damn
crackling
cool.
through him, you know.
He looks damn cool.
He's still big, but they don't make as much notice of it, do they?
Well, he's back in the armour, the shaped armour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you don't notice it. It's just flat.
Yeah. I thought we were going to get a scene at some point of Thor shedding the weight.
So did I. I half thought the lightning would just rip it off him or something. Like, instantly transform into the Adonis that he normally is.
Mm. But so when are you going to drop this fucking news item, dude? Like, when's this happening?
Oh, dude, it links into the end. It links into the end.
Okay, cool.
Three of them go toe-to-toe with Thanos in the best choreographed fight scene of the movie.
Why can't Thor beat him? I thought Thor could do it, man. Like, Thor's done it already.
Remembering that was Thanos after he'd used the gauntlet.
Sort of a battle scar.
So Thanos. Crippled Thanos.
But can normal Thor take down
Hulk? And this is Thanos.
This is take down Thanos. No.
I think it's going to be a pretty even match.
Right, okay.
And remember, that was Thanos after beating the Avengers on Titan.
Right.
So he'd gone through a battle with everybody there.
Yeah.
He'd then gone to Wakanda, snapped his fingers, lost his left arm, basically.
Sure.
And at that point, he'd had the axe thrown at him.
But how good is Thor against him in the start of Infinity War? Does he hold his own for a while?
Not really. Remember. We don't see it.
He's hammered, isn't
it? It starts with him lying on the ground and picked up. But that was Thanos with the power gem.
So it's like two heavyweights going at each other, basically.
And remembering that power gem, like, we'd seen footage of Esos the Destroyer, just one power gem, one tap, blowing up a planet.
Okay.
So Thanos had the power to destroy planets.
And he had that when he fought
in his hand before he went to fight the Asgardians.
Gotcha. Okay.
So they've never fought toe-to-toe without...
Right.
A gem between
them. Whereas in this, so Thor goes at him. I was surprised that actually Thanos could beat them.
But remember, this is also overweight Thor. This isn't Thor at his peak.
Cap, okay, Cap is just a human.
But Cap's always at his peak.
Yeah.
That's part of the
Super Soldier. And Iron Man's there too, though.
Iron Man's there too. All three of them go at him.
But Iron Man kind of gets knocked out, doesn't he?
Yeah, but there's cool kind of moments where he's built in the lightning receiver.
Yeah.
Like, hit me up, Thor, and then the five beams
cool.
of...
That was cool.
...energy come shooting out.
Yeah.
They're all working together now. They know how the...
There was something out of
Marvel. The shield, the hammer, and the beams all work together now.
Yeah.
So, brilliant little combos, well-choreographed fight scene.
Mm.
RDJ gets knocked out early.
He does. He does.
Thor, Cap gets knocked down quite
yes.
early.
Yes.
Thor has a little solo run.
Yep.
Loses the hammer.
Mm.
Keeps going. Eventually, he knocks the sword out. The axe gets turned around.
That's right. And he's pushed
because the Thanos axe. Catches the axe,
Thanos
which is cool.
Pushing the axe into his armor, yeah. isn't he?
Which references the reversal from Infinity War.
Yeah.
And then we see the hammer lift off the ground slowly, and you're thinking,
yeah,
Thor's just summoning the hammer.
Sure.
But then we get that brilliant moment where Cap comes charging in
with the hammer.
Did
it get cheese in your cinema or it got cheese in mine?
Oh, yeah. It got massive cheese.
Okay. Yeah. We should make mention of that, actually. Yeah. It got cheese in mine.
It's a big moment, though, isn't it?
That's huge. Well, it's kind of the moment that it's been building up to.
We got a little nod to the possibility in Ultron.
Yeah.
When he nudged it a little bit and kind of
and
go.
And Thor was like, shit.
Yeah. And now Thor's like, I knew it.
Yeah. Well, it fits with the character. I mean, if
it does. It's been done in the comics.
Yeah, definitely.
We've seen him lift Mjolnir before.
I think JLA Avengers, he's got the hammer at some point. Yeah.
So, fantastic scene. Good. And him using the hammer and shield, just punching Thanos around.
Yeah.
Knocking him around, knocking him back.
So, how does he fail, though? What happens? I forget.
Effectively, Thanos just starts leveling it out. He gets the sword... And he starts going to town on the shield.
Yeah, that's right. He shatters the shield, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That was a big moment for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Watching the sword get buried in the shield, which is indestructible.
I want to say this on record. Although I'm a huge Iron Man fan, I'm going to mention it later on. I have a ton of respect for Captain America as a character. I put on my Facebook page with that line from Captain America. He says, "General, I'm all to nothing but the dream." And he's just got the flag. And it's like the dream. Like, that is Cap, isn't it?
And this is Cap's movie.
Yeah.
Infinity War was Iron Man. It was centered around Iron Man and his kind of ethos.
Sure.
This was Cap's movie. Sure. This was...
Yeah.
Everyone was there, but Cap played the biggest emotional role.
The sweeping moments, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. True.
And then we get possibly the most beautiful frame from any Marvel movie I've ever seen.
Mm.
And it's Cap standing there with half a shield.
Oh, yeah.
With the kind of sunlight just touching him.
Yeah.
With Thanos and his entire army.
Yeah.
The Chitauri army, the Outrider army, just flooding in. The Black Order are there.
It's Bad News Bears, basically.
It's everything that's bad from Avengers and from Infinity War all showing up at once.
Yeah.
Behind Thanos, who at this point seems close to unbeatable.
Yeah. And Cap's still standing
there. And it's just Cap. It's just Cap alone standing there in the sunlight.
Well, I think it says something about Cap that he will be the last man to go down, you know?
But that's like that frame. If you freeze frame that moment, it is a gorgeous frame of cinema.
Yeah, I agree. And
they framed it perfectly.
It's dark. It's
Cap
the dawn,
against the worst odds the world has ever seen, and he's standing there,
knowing that he would lose that fight 100%.
But he's still willing to stand up.
He's not going to back away.
Yeah,
you know, there is no retreat from this.
No,
fight.
Fantastic.
Great scene, and it says everything about Cap. And you know, it's inspirational. It hits all the beats that we need and expect from Captain America.
And then we get the crackling of Sam coming into his ear. With one of the great lines from Winter Soldier, on your left.
Mm.
And you just know that it's all coming full circle at that point.
Well, yeah, because Sam dusted, didn't he?
Sam dusted.
Yeah.
And this is the first sign that people are back from the snap.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'd kind of seen Laura on the phone. We'd seen the birds.
Yeah.
But now we see the heroes.
And in fairness, when this happens, it's very easy to forget while you're watching this movie that they just snapped. Because a lot of shit's gone down.
It snapped moments before.
Yeah. A lot of shit.
So
happens.
These guys are all kind of waking up and coordinating. Yeah. And this is where Doctor Strange plays that role.
Yeah.
He knew what was going to happen. Like, he'd seen this happen before.
Well, didn't he say 1 out of 14 million or something?
605, yeah.
Yeah.
14,605,000 and we win one of them.
Wow.
So we just see that portal slowly open up.
Mm.
Black Panther walks through.
Yeah. Got a cheer from our audience. Did Spider-Man come before Black Panther?
No. Panther was the first one through with Okoye and with his younger sister, who
got a cheer in my cinema. A muted cheer, but a cheer nonetheless.
A cheer. For Falcon flies through after that.
Yeah, did get a cheer in mind. I liked it.
I got opening night. I got a cheer.
Yeah.
The second portal opens, and you see Drax.
Yeah.
And the lady with the antennas,
Mantis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the fact that Rocket doesn't remember her name,
yeah,
I love.
Yeah, the chick with the antennas. Yeah.
Mantis walks in, and then you see...
Don't forget Dave Bautista with his controversy. I was wondering if he'd turn up.
He shows up. Yeah. Doctor Strange walks through.
Yes.
And then in the background, you see Spidey swinging through.
Got the biggest cheer
that
in mind.
That was a big cheer.
Got a big cheer in mind.
That was... And then we see all the portals open.
Yeah.
Like 50 portals all opening up, and every army comes through. I saw Skrulls walk through.
Oh, did you?
Skrulls were there. Asgardians were there. The Wizards were there from Kamar-Taj.
Okay. Who are they, Stu?
So the schools that Strange learned at?
Oh, they're all the portals, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
But like all the wizards, were pouring through.
Yeah.
What's left of the Skrull race was pouring through. The Asgardians were all pouring through.
What do you think about the Skrulls fighting in this battle on the human side? Like, this is wasting the Skrulls to me.
Look, it's the band of Skrulls that Captain Marvel saved.
Okay, so it's Captain Marvel's Skrulls.
There was a tiny moment there.
Okay.
But you saw a character that was meant to look like Ben Mendelsohn's.
Oh, okay.
Like Skrull standing there.
But not
so yet. It was a small team of them, but they'd all showed up kind of thing.
This is why Stu's on the signal. Four fucking viewings, people. He's no fucking amateur.
We get every hero walk through. We get Valkyrie showing up on the Pegasus.
That was cool.
Which was sick.
Do you remember my comment where I said she was as big as RDJ to this franchise? That was a big comment from me.
It was a big comment.
it was a stupid comment.
But yeah. Maybe you should have filtered that one.
I was pretty high on my supply there.
Maybe unfiltered Dave should have filtered that
unfiltered,
one.
Unfiltered, yeah.
Korg and Meek come through.
Yeah.
Like, every character that can fight shows up then and there.
And there's some pretty weak characters doing poses, too, where I was like...
Well, the fact that Mantis was there at all, I'm like...
Mantis!
She's out of her depth.
Yeah, I was like...
She's out of her depth.
Mantis better stay at the back of this one, unless we want cannon fodder, in which case she's perfect.
I mean, just quickly putting people to sleep.
What is her power?
Well, she can put people to sleep.
That's it.
That's about it.
If she's touching them or something, isn't it?
Yeah, she's got to be touching them.
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
I mean, what she... We didn't see her do anything on the battlefield, really.
No, we saw her do a pose, basically. Strike a pose.
Yeah. Which would look like a praying mantis. That's her pose now. Which I kind of liked.
I suppose so, yeah.
But she's 100% out of her
depth. Thanos himself was like... it took stock. And then the army's charged, basically.
But at that point, when you had the Wakandan army...
Mm.
With all their ships flying through.
Mm.
And then Ant-Man emerges as Giant Man carrying Hulk and Rhodey and Rocket.
That was cool.
That they'd pulled out of the rubble.
Yeah.
It suddenly looked like the odds had evened out.
Oh, for sure. It was definitely a... it went from being an unwinnable battle to a battle where there's definitely potential. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, then we have the
Magicians are a big part of that with their shields. Because otherwise,
the Magicians were a big part. I mean, they opened up all the portals. They had the shields.
Captain Marvel hadn't come back yet, had she?
No.
Yeah. That was the killer point.
That's the big reveal kind of thing from this battle.
It was a very predictable, but it was necessary.
But I liked that they kind of set up a battle. They had a couple of reunions. Spidey and Iron Man was the big one.
Yes.
Seeing Iron Man hug him, that was heartbreaking.
In fact, I had tears in my eyes at that point.
That was hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And watching Spidey just go, this is nice.
And Spidey had the Iron Man suit, didn't he? The Iron Spider suit.
Yeah.
In this battle.
But he had that innocence, like, I got all dusty and I must have passed out because I woke up and now we're all here.
Exactly.
Like, he was super happy and...
Well, it's good to know he wasn't in pain, Stu. Marvel's most popular character.
Well, exactly right.
So that was good.
We saw Gamora and Star-Lord kind of meet up again.
Yeah, got to say...
Not
hot on Star-Lord at the moment, at this point in time. For some reason, I'm just not feeling it, you know?
This wasn't a big film for him.
No.
Sorry. Remembering that he only showed up post-snap.
Tiny film for him.
Took out a few people.
Yeah.
Reunited with Gamora and then... met that Gamora for the first time.
We know that Chris Pratt and the Guardians will be back with James Gunn directing once he's completed his obligations to the Suicide Squad, but that's years away.
It is years away.
It's years away. That could be 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, he's there. He's a place setter.
He's there. We get to see a cool moment where she rips his hand away like we saw in Guardians 1.
I like that.
That was cool. And then we see them try to play Get It to the Time Machine. Because they realise they've got the ugly brown van, which I liked.
Mm.
You had that moment with the La Cucaracha horn.
And in fairness, this is my criticisms relate to the final battle. I didn't think much. And I love Spidey. I didn't think much of this relay NFL-style kind of fucking... It reminded me of the worst parts of Justice League where they're running... I don't know. I just didn't think much of it at all.
I really like that bit.
Yeah. I know some people will.
I like that when Hawkeye was carrying it and went, I'm out of my depth.
Yeah.
Black Panther takes it and he's clearly better.
I just find that stuff so fucking cheesy that I find it hard to digest. I really do.
I love those bits. I think that's exactly what you want in the final battle. That's what you're there for.
Well, it's what you get. And, like, to be fair, I will say this. I mean, I'm on record. We've done a whole spoiler review of how much I love this movie. I did find points of this final battle on the nose. That scene, the scene of where they did, like, Captain Marvel came back, which was great. I love that. But then when it's like, she's got back up and they did, like, all the females. Michelle turned around and went girl power and made a vomit noise. And for me... Nothing wrong with the concept. It's the execution. It's so on the nose.
That was the most tokenistic version of an all-female Avengers.
Thank you.
That was really poorly done.
And can I say this? I have nothing against them doing that kind of movie as a female Avengers movie.
No, but I struggled when they put in all of them because it made it very obvious what they were doing.
Yeah.
If they'd have had, say, Pepper and Scarlet Witch.
Sure.
Just two of them show up and say, she's got backup. And then they both go shooting beams and flying and taking out the air support while she just blasts through on the ground.
Yeah.
That's a cool scene.
Yeah, but instead
that's a cool little, like,
shot, Stu, that would just...
Girl power, like, scene where just two or three of them meet up and they kick ass together.
When
you put in eight of them and you throw them all together, including Mantis, who's horrendously out of her depth.
Terrible.
And just there to make up numbers, it seems.
Yeah, I know. That was probably one of the poorest parts.
Very
of the
poorly
movie.
Done.
Yeah.
Having said that, it did follow Spidey going insta-kill, which I thought was a really funny moment.
And
he's just stabbing people with those spider arms through the face.
I loved it. Hey, dude, in fairness, in terms of my criticisms of the movie, it really is just the relay race and that other scene with the all-girl crowd all crashed in.
The all-girl crowd, I completely agree. It's tokenistic. It actually hurts their agenda.
That's where my...
But I enjoyed the relay. I thought that was moment.
Plenty do. I just feel, and this is bigger, comment than just Marvel movies, so many sort of fantasy movies and sort of superhero things, they fail in final battles. It's very video game footage. And I just felt that this was a bit like that. But that said...
Well, of course it is. You can't have anything else. It's impossible to have anything else.
Yeah, but I don't know, man. Like, I started to get removed from it a little bit. That said...
Like, when you have thousands of people clashing, it's going to look like that. There's no other way they can have thousands of people clashing.
Mm.
Unfortunately, you can't choreograph a fight scene with actual actors. That's just too big a job. It's impossible to do.
It just reminds me of, like, Battle of Five Armies, the Hobbit movies that suffered the same problem. That said, these are very minor critiques, and I'm giving it a 9.5. And I just wanted to put them on the record as my only slightly negative points in a very positive review. I just wanted to put that on the record.
Then the all-female thing is on the nose. It's bad.
I really, yeah.
I completely agree with that.
I thought that Michelle was the one who turned to me and made the vomit noise. I didn't say anything.
Smart move, yeah.
I just rolled my eyes when she did
that. No, that's bad.
Yeah.
But Spidey going insta-kill and carrying the gauntlet was great. Cap throwing the hammer.
Yeah.
Heads up Queens.
And Captain Marvel did something cool too.
Marvel blowing through the sanctuary.
I thought that was fucking wicked. Like, I've got to be honest, his Captain Marvel character is really growing on me. And I really do like the new haircut.
Blasting through the ship.
Yeah.
And taking down their giant gun. It was fantastic.
Great. No, I fucking loved it.
Realizing that she can basically carry the gauntlet on her own.
Yeah.
But that tiny little, hi, I'm Peter Parker moment.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It was great.
I don't know how you're going to get it over there, but here you go.
It was fantastic.
She then flies through, completely obliterating the whole point of having eight women to help her when she can just literally fly through it on her own.
Thank you. They did very little.
Thanos figures what she's going for, destroys the van.
Now, Thanos beat her as well.
Well, remember, Thanos had to take the gem out of the gauntlet and punch her in the face with the full power of a power gem.
Right, okay.
That's something that can destroy a planet.
Oh, right, so he took a shot at her with the power gem.
Yeah, he grabbed the power gem out of his gauntlet, which she was holding on to, powered up his right fist.
I see.
And punched her in the face.
I see. Thank you.
So he's literally put the power to destroy a planet yeah. into her face, and she's flown off.
Well, that explains that.
So that's what it takes to drop
her. And is that when Doctor Strange then said to Iron Man and held his hand up with the one, like they said?
Yes. He's okay. busy creating that vortex of water, saving everyone from drowning.
Right.
And at that point, he kind of looks over and holds up that one shaky finger.
Yeah.
And Robert Downey realizes this is the one out of the 14 million.
Okay. And now shout out to James, Michelle's cousin. Great guy. His girlfriend, Becky, great as well. They're a great couple. Now, James had a question, and I had the same question. So then RDJ, as Tony Stark, flies in.
RDJ then knows.
Yeah.
This is the reality.
Yeah, this is it.
He needs to do whatever it takes to save Morgan.
Now, what does he do, though? He comes in. He somehow gets the gem in his power.
He grabs the gauntlet.
Yeah.
Thanos puts it on.
Right.
He holds onto the gauntlet, and you see him holding onto the gauntlet.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
Looking at it.
Uh-huh.
And at that moment, he's actually taking the gems out of Thanos' gauntlet and putting them in his own.
Now, here's James' question, my question. Is that Doctor Strange's magic, or is that like electronic through his gauntlet that he's doing?
No, that's all the nanofights in his gauntlet.
Thank you. Well, you've answered my question and James' question.
The only thing Doctor Strange did in that scene was prompt him to say, go for it now.
That's what
He's holding up
saying, this is it.
This is the moment.
Yeah, this is match point, mate. This is it.
Exactly right.
Gotcha. Okay.
So he's kind of sneakily doing it on the underside of the hand.
Yeah.
Transferring. And we saw him do it like when he first made the gauntlet. Yeah. The Iron Man gauntlet.
It fits with how he uses the...
So he uses his nanobites.
Ever since Iron Man 3 he's used this, hasn't he?
No, Infinity War was the first upgrade to this tech.
Okay, cool.
The nanite sort of stuff.
All right, well...
Takes the gems, puts them in his own gauntlet, and we see the I am Iron Man moment.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we all knew, if Hulk can barely survive it, Iron Man's not.
I did, yeah, well, I was still in denial, but I did think it, and then it was quickly proven.
Because before that battle, I kind of knew someone's going to wear that gauntlet and someone's going to kill themselves to save everyone.
Oh, you certainly saw it coming. You knew that it was going to be Iron Man or Cap.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be Cap, to be quite honest. And then I kind of... There was a point where I realised it's not going to be Cap.
Well, I think they wanted to go out on a huge high for RDJ.
And they did. They really did.
Yeah, they did. And he clicks.
He snaps his fingers.
Everyone goes dust who's Thanos' army.
Thanos goes to dust. Thanos' entire army, all his ships...
And finally Thanos at the end.
Finally Thanos.
He slumps to the ground, doesn't he?
He kind of sits there in reflection and just looks on and like, I've failed.
Yeah, he's failed. Like, just.
As he turns to dust and then RDJ kind of slumped up against a piece of scrap metal.
He's hammered.
Rhodey comes in first, realises Peter Parker's coming in and kind of nods that we'll let the kid have his moment.
Well,
which I thought was a really nice Don Cheadle moment.
Yeah, definitely.
And when he steps aside and knows this is it, I'm saying goodbye, but the kid needs it more than I do.
Yeah, it was very touching. Like in fairness, like there is a connection there between Peter Parker and Tony Stark.
Oh, absolutely. This is Peter Parker's Uncle Ben moment.
It is
because he didn't get an Uncle Ben. He doesn't have that
exactly. Well, he had one originally, but, like, this is the movie one.
But this is the big death in his life that he feels like he maybe could have helped or prevented or...
And let's face it, Tony... Because
Tony's been the father figure.
And then Tony gave it back
to him. Exactly right. This is Tony being the father figure and dying. This is the Uncle Ben moment for Spider-Man.
Yeah, no, it's big.
The MCU's big. Uncle Ben is RDJ.
Very cleverly done by Marvel.
Pepper comes in and basically says, I'm going to be okay. We're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Talking about Morgan, which lets him rest.
And
finally.
The world as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone. Like, it was kind of like Iron Man's had a lot on his shoulders. You know?
Yeah, he's carrying the weight of planet Earth.
Man, it's fucking intense. And I was struggling by this point. And then someone sobbed in the cinema. Michelle laughed, which was funny. But,
people were openly just crying.
I explained to Michelle afterwards. I said to her, you've got to understand that, like, I was very sad. And I'm going to go into more detail. But 12, 13-year-olds, 15, like, they're more unfiltered. Like, they're younger. They've grown up with these characters. I can understand how upset they'd be in a cinema like this.
My cinema, it was adult. It was... Full-blown adults just crying.
Yeah, well, I tears my eyes. And I mean,
this is 11 years worth of investment in this character.
I'll say this. Robert Downey Jr. has been fantastic. His whole career has been very interesting. I followed it for a long time. I mean, he reborn himself with Iron Man 1. His career was in tatters. He couldn't get insurance on Iron Man 1. Jon Favreau paid for it. You know, he was uninsurable.
Yeah.
And this was a guy who'd won Oscars. And he was a fantastic actor in the 90s. I went through some dark times myself, and I remember Robert Downey Jr. was up and fucking down. And he quotes, like, you know, I was like, I've got a gun in my mouth, I like the taste of the metal, to the judge. You know, he hit rock bottom as a person. He bounced back fucking hard. He cut a sweet deal with Marvel and picked up a shitload of money from the Iron Man franchise. And he gave it back in terms of performance. He injected so much of his personality and his energy into Tony Stark. He made Tony Stark a million times more interesting than he was in the comics. And my first comic I ever bought was Iron Man. An Iron Man Armor Wars comic where he actually had a fight with Cap. That was a bitchy fight, but it was a moment, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And I got sucked into that Marvel universe fast because I read the Cap version of the fight as well.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting. And I've always liked Iron Man. I always remember he was the first comic I bought. And Robert Downey Jr., one of my favorite actors of all time, has been awesome in this role. And I thought this was... I didn't want to see this happen, but I kind of knew it was going to happen. I knew in my soul this was going to happen.
Man. We knew there were going to be big, big deaths. And this is the biggest death they could have had.
And, I mean...
this was the heart and soul of the MCU.
Yeah.
Being ripped out.
Now, okay, so let's... I wanted to pay that tribute because it's essential. Obviously, there's a funeral scene. We see the wreath, which is proof that Tony Stark has a heart.
Yeah, which is the Gen 2 version of the arc reactor
now,
in his chest.
Okay, Stu, neither of us are too surprised by this turn of events.
No. Well, I mean, we both said we think RDJ is safe and Cap's going to die.
Yeah, I may have said that, but I was feeling the opposite when I walked into the cinema, to be honest.
I was worried.
Yeah, look, I was. But here's my point. Okay, he's gone. There was a video message at the end. It's all very sad. I'm still very raw about it all. Is there any chance that we will have, at any point in the future, kind of an AI version or an alternate version? What do you think?
No, and it's because I think he is the Uncle Ben of this universe.
Okay.
He's the death that we can't take back because it meant way too much.
Not even AI?
No. See, I think we'll get people in an Iron Man suit.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
I think we could potentially get a Pepper Potts showing up at some point, an Iron Lad we've mentioned before, version of...
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying they won't continue the franchise or the character.
The MCU is continuing. We know the MCU is continuing. Yeah. There is potential for Iron people to be in it, whatever version that is.
And that's going
to
be tricky.
Whether it's an Iron Lad, an Iron Heart, a Rescue...
There's Cheadle.
Or some other new thing.
There's Cheadle.
War Machine's still going around.
Yeah.
But we won't see Robert Downey come back to that role.
Okay.
Unless it's a old footage kind of thing.
Sure. Well,
like this movie did, where they reshot scenes from past movies.
Part of my question was this. I probably agree with
The debt, it's way too big. It's Uncle Ben level big.
What about the fact that they played with time so much, and we spoke last episode about the potential of time travel stories like a Kang the Conqueror? If they bring in something like that, could there be perspectives down the track, do you think?
Like I said, you can put him in an old time.
Sure.
They visit the time when he's alive. You could have a scene like that.
Yeah, or an alternate world.
Alternate world, I think, is less likely. I think Robert Downey is...
done.
I think he's done. I think he's done everything he wanted to do with this role. He's made it the biggest thing on the planet.
And he made a lot of money out of it, too.
He's been so successful and...
It's just tough, man.
It's such a big role.
You know, it just feels like to me...
The other thing is, if you bring him back, it kind of cheapens what was that death.
Well, like I said, like Jean Grey has come back too many times in the comics, and it doesn't feel like it felt when she died back whenever, in 1980 fucking one or whenever it was.
Let me put it this way. If in 10 years' time, they finally get another Avengers massive movie.
Sure.
X-Men, Fantastic Four, every Avenger against... Kang, Immortus, and their entire army with Annihilus. Like,
sure.
Monster scale again.
Everyone.
And it takes another 10, 15 years to get there.
He'll be in his 70s by that point.
Yeah, but Sam Jackson was in his 70s in Captain Marvel.
No, I'm saying.
All they need is his voice and the Iron Man suit.
Yeah.
And they've got an amazing cameo pulled from time that they can put in there.
You're basically saying this is it, though, really.
I'm saying if they really wanted to, they've got one cameo. If they do any more, they're going to start cheapening that moment.
Mm.
I think they're ruining what they've spent 10 years building.
It's a great moment. And sometimes, as painful as it is for me to say, it's about knowing when to walk away.
And in the
words of fucking Kenny Rogers, you know?
Yes, this is a comic book movie, and that means no death is ever final.
Mm.
There is always a way back.
Mm.
But I think from a story point of view, from a just a contracts point of view as well, like they've...
It's huge.
They've said goodbye. They did it in such a nice, a brilliant movie to say goodbye to him in. I feel like this is almost the perfect way out.
It probably is. I think you're probably right. I'm just looking for possibilities, but I'm
there is always hope. There is always hope. Like if you're wondering, is it ever possible to see a character again? Yes, it's a comic book movie. There is always a way back.
When I said to Ray, this is the last thing I'll say on a personal level. I've always felt so connected to RDJ's performances in general in his career. I mean, this is a guy who did Chaplin, won an Oscar, did Restoration, Hearts and Souls, like lots of good movies. I at one point I said to Ray, I think like a part of my soul's died. You know, this was yesterday. I'm fine today. Obviously, I'm back on board. But you know, like it's big. And hey, that's success. That's success from the Russo brothers. That's success from RDJ pulling off. That's the writers. That's everyone around him. That's a great performance. This is why I'm giving it a 9.5. I mean, I think it's exceptionally good. I don't give 9.5s to much. Heat, fucking Scarface, you know, there's very few movies I give 9.5s to. Yeah. Very few. It's a high watermark for filmmaking. Now, so turning to, obviously, we had Cap. They did something with Cap.
After the funeral, we got that little video that he made.
Mm. Yes.
Which was very meta.
Sure.
Because he's saying, if you told me I'd create this universe 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been surprised, but my God, the scale of it. And you're like, that's exactly how we're all feeling.
I don't think Jon Favreau or RDJ realised what they were putting into place.
No, like, and that little moment was very meta in that it's exactly how the fans are feeling.
Yeah, and having Jon Favreau back
10 years ago, when we had Iron Man and we had the Hulk just come out.
Sure.
If someone had told us, in 10 years' time, you're going to have this... It's a long way to go.
We hoped. I hoped. I'd been hoping for this for some time, but the level of execution being so high, I wouldn't have bet that they would have done that because I've seen so many comic book movies be poor or stumble towards greatness.
Yep.
No, I wouldn't have. I'm impressed and surprised. I remember it pretty clearly. This 10 years, you know, I've been busy. We've kind of analysed it every step of the way. It's been done, I think, about as well as it can be done in terms of the main Avengers line.
Absolutely.
You know, I really think.
No, absolutely. I don't think anyone could have done this any better.
Yeah.
I think this was the perfect kind of storm.
I almost want to go back and watch the RDJ journey from Iron Man 1.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you can go back to Iron Man 3 and see where the kid comes from.
I've watched Iron Man 3 like 25
times. I'm surprised you didn't recognize...
No, I do now that you say that. Like, I was looking at him. And I was trying to place him, and now that you say that, it makes
sense. He's aged up significantly.
No, I see it now. In the cinema, I had so many fucking things in my head going on that when I saw him, I was kind of like, who is that kid?
Yeah.
But 2 seconds of thought. And we get a
brief conversation that basically goes along the lines of Natasha can't come back.
Mm.
The Vision can't come back.
Shit, no loss.
They're both gone.
When did Vision die? I don't remember.
Well, Thanos ripped his head out with the gem.
Fuck, finally. Like Vision, to me, a zero player.
You know? Well, the other thing is they've now killed the person that built him. Like, Ultron and Tony built Vision.
That's right.
And now that they're both gone, there's no way they can go, well, let's just make a robot better.
No.
You could, in theory, take him to Wakanda. They've got the tech there.
No one's missing Vision.
Rebuild him. I don't think that's completely out if they wanted to.
Dude, if he's going to turn up anywhere, it'll be in the Scarlet Witch TV show. You know?
Exactly right. We've got spin-offs. We've got other ways.
And that is something this movie was kind of cheesily did at the end. They set up like, oh, we've got the fucking Black Panther family here. We've got this, you know, the camera pan between all the different factions.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, they're obviously going to be standing with their closest friends. Whether it's a support thing or whether it's just a people you know
type. I know, but they may as well have had signs above them for their next fucking movie. Like... It was what it was, though. I mean, I was in a fairly sad place when I was witnessing this. I do like that Jon Favreau is back on the bench, the director of the
film. And Morgan asked for cheeseburgers,
yeah,
which was Iron Man 1,
yep,
straight off the jet from the
That's it, man. Deserts. And he said, your dad liked cheeseburgers.
Yeah. That was a cool little moment from Jon Favreau.
So let's cut to the moment with, obviously, Cap is given the task of going back and putting things back in their place.
Yeah, so Hulk sets up a little time machine, a mini one.
Mm-hmm.
And this is some time later. Like, sure. Obviously, he's had time to build this time machine.
Yes, yes.
Because obviously it got destroyed in the battle.
It's very much post the funeral.
He brings out the stones, which they've kept safe.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you're going to go back in time, you're going to take the stones back, put them back where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
It gives the hammer as well to take back to Asgard.
Yep.
Because obviously Thor took the hammer away and they need the hammer back in Asgard. That's a kind of key thing.
Oh, okay. So Thor gave the hammer back.
Well, remember how Cap took the hammer with him when he left?
Yeah.
Well, it's because Thor basically stole the hammer from... The Thor of the Dark World, right?
And Thor's quite happy with his axe, isn't he?
Well, yeah, Thor's got Stormbreaker. He's not hurting for a weapon.
But
Cap takes the hammer back as well as the stones, the things that were stolen from time.
Yep.
And then it's back in 5, 4, 3, 2, nothing comes back.
Nothing comes back. And then we had someone who was obviously Steve Rogers sitting on a bench. I thought, and Michelle thought, that was going to be a young Steve Rogers. Because I thought, or a non-super soldier serum Steve Rogers. From the
thing. Oh, you thought he was going to go back before
I didn't know what exactly, but I just thought it was somehow going to be someone who hadn't had him without having... I thought he was very thin-looking, but we get there and the reveal was it was an aged...
Yeah, old man Cap.
Which is straight out of comics.
Yep.
Who Dimension X.
Passes the shield over. And who is wearing the wedding ring.
Yes.
And it references back to when Peggy died.
Mm.
And she said it's been such a long time.
Uh-huh.
She was married to Cap the entire time. I thought that was a brilliant little moment.
Right.
You kind of now go back, because Peggy said she'd been married this whole time.
I see, yeah.
We knew that Peggy married happily and spent most of her life...
I'm totally confused, though. Like, how?
What do you mean, how? How what?
I get it. Like, you know, I thought, like... He said he went back and he chose to stay married to her.
Well, he married her. He didn't.
I'm stay confused married. Though. Like how? Because like Cap was being Cap. I'm sort of confused. Like, explain it to me because I'm a bit puzzled.
Well, there were two Caps throughout history.
Oh, I see. Okay,
he went back in time and he was basically just hiding out with Peggy Carter.
I see. Okay, got you. Okay,
there were two Caps throughout history.
Regular Cap was doing his normal
in the same way that this entire movie we had two Nebulas floating around.
So, for example,
Cap dropped the gem back in the 1970s.
Yes.
Then went back to the 1950s.
Right.
And so maybe a few years after he went into the ice.
Got you.
Met up with Peggy Carter.
And married
which was
her.
Straight after... The Agent Carter TV show.
Yes, gotcha.
She marries Cap.
Yes.
They have that dance. They finally get the dance as the closing moment.
So the whole time from then on, he was just living with her and basically a happy marriage.
And every time we referenced Carter and she said, I've been married for 40 years or whatever she was, she knew the whole time that she married Captain America. But throughout the other movies, Cap didn't know that he went back in time and married her.
I got you now.
So she knew the whole time that they were married.
I thought it was like in some alternate universe and then he came back to this one. I wasn't...
No, there were two Caps throughout history.
I see.
He went back, dropped everything off.
So this guy just turned up at the bench.
Well, no, this is him living through time.
Uh-huh.
He got back to the moment the long way. He lived through the 50s through to now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So... I see. I got you. Okay.
Are you sure? You kind of look tired and confused.
I get it. Did he magically turn up when they did the machine?
Well, he knew when and where they were doing the machine. He just walked there and sat
on
the bench.
That's what I'm asking you. So he just walked there and sat on the bench?
Yeah.
That's what I'm asking you. No, that makes more sense. Because in my thought, I was like, I get the basic point of what he was with her the whole time. I just wasn't sure how. When there was another Cap doing crazy Cap shit, you know, since he came back, or was in the ice. And so, but what you're saying is he came back and met her and then just married her and stayed undercover kind of thing.
Yeah, there were two Caps the entire time.
Uh-huh.
One of them basically lived the civilian life.
Now, what are you pointing to as your back door thing? Because I think there is a backdoor to Cap coming back at some point in this franchise.
What do you mean? They de-aged Scott Lang twice. They turned him into a baby. They turned him into a young man.
Agree. You agree with
that? They now have the technology which can age or de-age a character.
And I'm just saying...
And they've now got an aged Cap who's still very much alive and happy.
Yes.
But has retired.
Old man Cap in the comics, remember?
Yeah.
When he passed on to...
Certainly not dead. Certainly not... He still has a super soldier serum flowing through his veins. At the
same time, Chris Evans doesn't have to be in the next movie or anything for the next few years.
He doesn't have to be in the next 10 movies.
He can chill. Yeah, he can chill.
If they have to, if they need someone,
yeah,
they've got time travel and they've got de-aging tech.
Okay, I totally agree with you. Thank you for explaining
that. So they aged out a character in a nice way to kind of farewell a character.
Yeah.
Which I'm kind of hoping now is what they do with Leia. They just age her out and they recast an older version of her to show up and just say, I've lived a good life kind of thing.
Sure.
It's a nice way to say goodbye to a character that we don't want to see die.
Yeah. Look, I mean, yeah. I think I'm interested to see how they do that because, yeah, but I agree that would not
It's a tough moment, and I think that's a way that fans would be okay with.
Yeah, well, sometimes past since her passing as well. I think emotions aren't as raw as they were when Carrie Fisher passed away.
Oh, for sure. But... seeing her on screens again, you're going to be reminded of
it. Did you hear my little comment with a cocktail?
No, I heard you. I'm just playing.
I love bringing that one up.
Once again, unfiltered Dave needs to filter.
No, I'm not going to fucking filter anymore because the fans have spoken.
Fans have spoken. Fans haven't said shit. You're talking over the fans.
I was too PC for too long. We all know it. So, dude, I think we've covered the whole fucking movie. Well done, Stu.
We have covered the movie.
Jesus. Like, it's gone for almost as long as the movie as well. Okay, so wrapping up, that's our spoiler review. Would you agree? Any final thoughts, comments?
Well, the final scene in my news.
Oh, yeah, give us the final scene. I don't know what you're talking about. What is it?
So, right before the end, we get the Asgardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Thor leaves with Rocket, leaving...
He does, indeed.
Leaving Valkyrie basically as queen of the Asgardians, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Peter Parker also goes back to school with all his friends at the same age, so they all died at the same time. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. There's news that Taika Waititi is heavily in talks to film the next Asgardians of the Galaxy movie.
Wow. That'd be interesting because James Gunn's a long way off.
With James Gunn.
So what, co-directing?
That's what they're looking at, yeah. Or they're looking at some directing and writing kind of combo.
Okay.
That's
interesting.
Yeah, because I think they're saying, we don't want to wait for years for James Gunn to come back.
Right.
So we're going to give him executive producer and writer and, like, get him involved as much as we can without him needing to be there on set every day directing.
Oh, I thought they'd announced that he was coming back to direct.
They want him to. They said, we're rehiring him. They want him on the project.
Right.
Timelines may not work out.
Well, there's a Suicide Squad commitments, you know.
Yeah, exactly right. And meanwhile, Taika Waititi has said, I want to work on the next Thor film.
Right.
And he's heavily, heavily in, like, final stage negotiations to do the next Thor film.
Well, I'm very interested in that.
And they're talking about combining it, doing the Asgardians of the Galaxy, which I think is a brilliant little...
I think it's a great idea.
Brilliant film. It worked so well in Ragnarok.
Both of these filmmakers have shown me that they know the material well and can extract the best out of what's there. I think there's lots of interesting possibilities there.
Exactly right.
And, I mean, Thor Ragnarok showed the potential of Thor. The previous two Thor films hadn't really shown.
So, like, going into it, I knew that Taika Waititi was in talks to do the next Thor film. So I knew Thor was going to make it through. Survive,
yeah. You knew the Thor
franchise. And they had said as Guardians of the Galaxy is a strong possibility.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, that's pleasant news.
It's very pleasant
news. I didn't know that at all. Okay. Well... Stu, I mean, I think that was a very interesting and thorough spoiler review of Avengers Endgame.
I mean, you got to be careful what you wish for when you ask me for a scene-by-scene review. That's
how I asked you because
what you're getting.
You're the main man. You came in with it, man, and you got it. I mean, I certainly couldn't have done it. Oh, fuck, I was, like, lost after about the third scene. It's maybe second. A couple of times I wanted to cut to the end, but I resisted.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did, Dave. You're a little... Punching for tangents is insatiable at times.
All right, well, thank you for listening for our spoiler review. Here he comes.
Here comes Speed Racer. He's a demon on wheels. He's a demon and he's gonna be chasing after someone. He's gaining on you, so you better look alive. He's busy revving up the powerful Mach 5. And when the odds are against him and there's dangerous work to do, bet your life's the racer, see it through. Go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go! He's often flying as he guns a car around the track. He's jamming down the pedal like he's never coming back. Adventure's waiting just ahead. Go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go!